Goodness gracious.
Let me put my jacket on.
I'm sober.
You're sober?
Yeah, use his phone. You want to take that?
Got it up on the screen. I'm going to have you on speaker. And basically,
it's just so different than it used to be. You know, it used to be tons of. They're all grown up. It's like they just don't want anything except new phones.
Don't touch it at the top.
You want to just do like.
But you'll do it.
We have Texas.
Yeah, leaky water glasses.
Okay. So we just joke back.
That we're single.
So my daughter.
Okay.
Just gonna
her uncle.
She's maintaining a residence outside. So.
And there was this.
Okay.
It's one of those gray areas.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Just don't
think of it. Just finishing up. Where have you been?
Jeff, it's Greg. How are you this morning?
Great, Greg. Happy almost
holiday. Right. We're about ready to begin. What I'll do is I'll do a brief introduction of what you are, and then if you could introduce yourself to the board, and then run your presentation. And you know, if they have any questions during the presentation, just pause, answer, and or if we wait till the end, that may be the case as well.
Okay, that sounds great.
Thanks, Jeff.
You bet.
Okay, that is good to know. We will start.
Yep.
Let's call to order the Board of Supervisors work session for this December 23rd, 2014. Our first item of business under the work session is demonstration of C-Click Fix application to report road issues. And we have Greg here and Bill here. If you could all introduce yourself and then someone on the phone as well. So let's start with Greg.
Thank you. Good morning. Greg Parker, Johnson County Engineer. We are here, as you referenced, to see an interesting and exciting mobile app called C-Click Fix. We also have Bill Horning, the IT director, with us. Bill, is that good enough for you? Or you?
That's good enough.
And then we have Jeff, who will give us a brief 15-minute presentation. And as we discussed, if you have questions during the presentation, that's good to capitalize on it at the time, or if you want to wait till the end, we shorten this up to about 15 minutes or less. So it's really, if you have questions, that would be your opportunity to ask him anything that would be of interest. So, Jeff, go ahead and introduce yourself and begin your presentation. Thank you.
Great. Thanks. And hello, everybody. My name is Jeff Mooney, and I'm the VP of Partnerships for C-Click Fix. And I am sensitive to your time today, so I'm definitely going to keep this to about 10 minutes, but I definitely welcome all questions. Just to give you a little background on C-Click Fix, we have been in business for about 6 years now, and we currently work with 230 municipalities across the U.S. and Canada. And they really range in size from small municipalities of about 10,000 to very large municipalities like Houston, Texas, and Pinellas County, and several others. And so what I'm going to do today is give you a brief overview of C-Click Fix. But in a nutshell, what we do is we provide citizen engagement channels for folks to be able to get information about what's going on at the county in terms of news, events, council agendas, as well as have a really streamlined interface to be able to view and submit service requests from a mobile application, from an interface on your website, and you can also add it to your Facebook page. And essentially what it does is it allows two-way communication with residents that's slightly different than a lot of historic applications that really just took information one way in for residents. And then after showing you the citizen interfaces, I'm going to shift gears a little bit and show you our admin portal where that can be used for managing service requests as well as visibility internally just for your staff about reporting and activities going on around the county. So with that, what I'm going to start with over here on the side, you can probably see a big phone. The idea is I'm going to show you Pinellas County. And we can put mobile apps into the iPhone and Android marketplaces under your branding. So they could be however you'd like to extend your branding to the marketplace. Pinellas County calls it Pinellas Connects, but you could call it any kind of branding you want. And the idea of the mobile application is while it does allow service request transactions, it allows you to do a lot more information about generally providing information to residents. So, for example, in Pinellas County, they use their mobile app to provide county news, information about weather, their Twitter account, Facebook. If someone wants to see county meetings, they can click on the meetings profile and see what all the next meetings are coming up. So what it really does is it takes a lot of the great information that you have in other places and serves it up on the mobile app. And I'm going to harp on this a couple times, which is there's an audience that engages with the county now by phone that will always continue to do that because that's what they're most comfortable with. But there's also a really broad audience who maybe isn't engaging with the county at all because what they're most comfortable with is using mobile devices because that's how they communicate with each other. Or it could also be folks that call now, but they'd rather self-service if the option existed. And that's really where these tools really start kicking in. So this, in addition to being able to do information sharing on the mobile app, you can also use, residents would have the power to click on issues, for example, and before submitting a new issue into Johnson County, they can see on an interface if you already know about this request. And they can open the one up, and they can see the details on a particular request, and see what action, in this case, this is one that's been acknowledged by the county already, and they can click on this to see what the status is. And what you'll find is this can kind of lay down on the same issue being issued reported multiple times because people can see that you already know about an issue. If I was going to report this and I see you already knew about it, I could click on actions and follow this issue. So even though I didn't submit it, when you actually close this issue out as resolved, not only will an email go to the person who reported it, but I'd get one sent to me too. So it's a great way of sharing information as well as cutting down on duplicate ticket submissions. And if I want to submit a new request, I can just click on report. And what we find is, while this is primarily thought of as a citizen tool, staff in the field use this a ton, as well as elected officials, because they're out seeing things all the time. And not only can residents use this to easily submit a request, but staff can too. So if I click on report, if the issue is right in front of me, because it's going to capture my current location, I can just move forward. But the interface is designed to make it really easy that if you want to report something maybe that's in a different location, so maybe I was driving to work when I saw something and took a picture, now that I arrived to where I was going, I could just drag and drop the pin to a different location or enter an address and click done. Once I've associated an address to the request, I can click on the issue, and this is where you would have complete control over what service request categories you want to have visible to either residents or staff to submit in. Each one of these can automatically be routed to a different department. And if I was to pick traffic sign, for example, you can also decide that if someone reports a traffic sign, what information do you want to share with them about how you handle traffic sign issues at the time of submission so the resident's smarter about, you know, what they should expect in terms of what action we'll be taking. And then you can also ask a lot of secondary questions that are specific to this request type. So, for example, in what direction were you heading when you saw the sign problem? I'm going to say south. Once you answer those secondary questions, you don't have to do this, but you have the option of attaching a photo. And I can either take a picture on the fly if I wanted to, or maybe I took a picture previously, and I just want to go to my photo gallery and go there and say, this is the street sign that was knocked down. And I can hit submit. And now this is going to be routed into the county, and it's going to go to the right department as well as get captured inside a hosted CRM for workflow management. And then at the same time, other residents can know that you already know about this issue. And as you update that request or close it out as being fixed, the community will automatically know about it. And that's a kind of a quick power review, but that's kind of the idea of the mobile app. And so what I was going to do now is kind of shift gears a little bit and talk about some of the other tools that come as part of this. So in addition to the mobile app, which I already kind of talked about in Pinellas County, is the idea that you can have secret fix added to your website. And on your website, service works very much the same way, where there's an interface that allows residents, before they submit a request, to see the request that you already are working on. And the color coding works basically if something is orange is a new request, something in green has been acknowledged, so that usually you've assigned it to a department, and anything in blue is a request that was closed within the last week. And on both the website and phone, the way it works is that once a request has been closed for a week, it becomes automatically archived. So it's still in your system for reporting and tracking, but from the citizen interface, we're only highlighting requests either in process or those recently closed. And then if you have a Facebook page, you can also add our Facebook app to it, which pretty much functions the same way. It's an app that's built into your Facebook page that allows residents to view service requests in process as well as route, submit a new request. What's great about this is that even though you have these different channels that residents can use to submit a service request to you, when you close out that request as being fixed, it dynamically updates all those channels as well as queue an email to the person who reported it, letting them know that it's been resolved. So it really closes the loop on the service request transaction that often kind of stops at the point of submission, and we want to make sure that folks know about all the great work that's being done. Now, I'm going to go through these slides really fast, but this is the idea of now you're going to take off your citizen hat and put on your administration hat. As I mentioned, phone calls are never going to go away, or walk-ins, because there's a certain community that's how they really like to communicate with the county, and that's great. And our interface is built that allows you to very easily take calls from residents and capture that information in the system. And there's a wizard that walks through the person on the phone. So if someone calls about a streetlight, it's going to dynamically bring up secondary questions that the person on the phone can ask to make sure you get the same data when someone calls in as if someone was to self-service. When it does get captured, you have this dashboard view, which is really the manager view that allows you to quickly see how many requests, and you can see where it says recent daily activity. It lets you see how many requests were open, closed, and acknowledged, looking over the last 30 days. To the right, it says issues by source, and this allows you to see where are these requests coming from? How many are coming in from self-service, meaning residents are using the iPhone, the Android, your website, and how many are in black, which reflects city-initiated, or in your case, county-initiated. And what those are really are phone calls. And what we find over and over again is that the distribution here dramatically shifts over time because often the majority of requests taken in before C-Click Fix are the traditional by phone or maybe by website. And then after they launch the service, a much larger portion are being taken in by self-service, which can save a lot of money because generally it takes somewhere around $3 to $5 to take a phone call with the time of the person on the phone and the data entry. So the more you can get folks to self-service, sometimes the greater their satisfaction, and also it can be cost savings. The other view I want to jump to, in addition to the dashboard view, is over here to the issue tab. And the issue tab is where your folks are really going to be managing the requests. It allows them to quickly run reports to see how many requests came in over the last couple of days, to search by request type or by priority of a request. They can very easily, from here, see the details of a request. So we like to make the interface very straightforward for the staff that are managing requests and have all the data that they need right at their fingertips. When one does come in, they can easily change the status of a request, assign it to another team member. This is where they can update the request. So when they assign it to a department, they can acknowledge the request, or when something's been closed, they can close it, which will dynamically update your mobile app, your website, and the Facebook page. And we know it's really important to see information, particularly about when someone sends in with a photo. So if someone does send in a request with a photo, you can very easily enlarge it here to get a better sense of what something looks like. And you can see the power of this really kicks in when someone, for example, reports a tree issue. And you can see, is it on the side of the road, or is it leaning on some wires? Is it a graffiti request? Is it a small tag on a mailbox, or is it some large offensive tag on a kid's slide? So it really kind of tells you a story that often you can't see just by taking a call. And then we also have an interface built into it that allows you to use our mapping service, which is on Google Maps, just to get a better sense as to where something's actually located. And then we also have a mapping tool built within the CRM. So I showed you the mapping interface on the website that you can put for residents to use. This is designed for your staff. And while you might have a GIS department that can run great charts and graphs, this is really kind of designed for the non-IT user that maybe you want to come in here and say, you know what, I'm just curious about what happened in a particular commission area around the county. And I just want to see service requests that relate to pothole or street light or graffiti, and I want to see just those that are still in process. And I could quickly generate a map that's going to show me just requests in that defined area. And then if I wanted to, I can look at that as a heat map. So instead of seeing individual issues, I can see concentrations of issues. So if you're doing some planning maybe about how you want to deal with after a storm, and you know there's been a lot of streetlight outages, you could quickly get a visual here and then maybe work with the utility company to focus on those areas first. The knowledge base is what we built into the system so that your folks that are fielding phone calls can very quickly, when someone calls in about a particular topic, you can search for that topic on the phone, answer, look up the question, and give an answer to the resident very quickly. We have a lot of clients that are very keen to try to make their customer service experience quicker when people call in, as well as to turn that around and say, now you get this great knowledge base of questions and answers, how can we allow residents to self-service that content? And we have an interface that can either be on your website or through the mobile app for the folks on the fly. And a good example someone told me the other day was they were in the park with their kids, and they looked over at the shelter and said they'd like to have a party here at the park, but they weren't really sure how to do it. So that means you have to go all the way back home, try to find the website, try to find the number, call the city, try to figure out how to rent space in the park. But if they actually had this, they could just go to the knowledge base on their phone and get the answer while they're standing there in the park. So it really allows folks to self-service content when and where they want to. You can do push notifications out. So if you, instead of doing service requests, you instead want to send out an alert about maybe garbage collection is going to be different due to the holiday, you can do a push notification out to residents and send a notice out to everybody. And then there's a lot of reporting where you can do a reporting by date range that lets you see over a particular time period how many requests were open and closed over that time period, where the request came from. And you can also see on average how long it's taking for things to get closed overall, as well as see a breakdown by request type as to how many requests were submitted and what the average close time is for each of those. But we also know you want to do a lot of reporting on the fly. So we have our insight tool allows you to pick a lot of different criteria to search by either where requests came from, their request type, the geography, and run these charts and graphs by date range. And you can see either you can do bar charts, pie charts, scatter charts. Pretty much we went and visited clients and we saw that they were exporting data to Excel and doing a lot of pivot tables to create these. And we decided there's a better way to do that. So they can run these charts and graphs themselves whenever they want to. And it really takes about, you know, a large percentage of what they have been doing manually, they can now do automatically from here. And then they can export those out. And then the last thing I'm going to show you is just the settings tab. And when we work with clients, we basically, our system's hosted, so there's nothing for you to install internally. We all host it in the cloud. But we give you a login to your system, and then we walk you through how to add the users to your account, which includes unlimited users, how to create service request types, so you can create as many categories across departments as you like, as those secondary questions. And this is where you can also manage the custom buttons on your phone. So you can add and take those away whenever you want. So you can create a button about a great New Year's Eve celebration that's taking place in Johnson County. And then after that has passed, you can take that button off your phone and put a new one on there about something related to maybe what's happening in the spring. The idea is it's dynamic and you have complete control over those buttons on the phone. And then we also have an API. And for those that are interested, it's an application programming interface that essentially allows folks that want to be able to consume our data in a certain way. You have a license to our API, too, so that you can consume the data into another system if you need to. And that is my power overview of CQuickFix. And I will just kind of finish with probably the thing that we do really, really well is we started with focusing on the citizen interfaces. So they're really, really user-friendly, and then work from there to build out our municipal tools based off of feedback from our clients. And so I think our usability is shown by the adoption rate, not only by citizens when it's launched, but by the municipal staff, because it's really straightforward to use. And again, it's designed for the non-IT user. And I'll stop there and answer any questions.
Well, you made it, this is Terrence Neuschel, one of the supervisors, you made it look really easy. But that's always the question of how much use are residents going to use, because it's so, there's so much stuff too. And so I think that one of the things I would like to know is, how do we get the word out about this, and how do we kind of teach people how to use it?
John.
Yeah. I mean, has that been a concern in other communities? I mean, I just want to make sure, does it get used yet?
So I think the question was, how do you, it's a great tool, but it's only a great tool if people actually use it and know about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just so, it's fairly complex, I think. So yeah, how do you make that sound easy for everybody?
Yeah. So part of what we do a lot of times, in addition to setting this up, so when we work with a municipality, say they come on board, it usually takes about 30 or 60 days for a project to go from beginning to publicly launched, and that includes us working with you to set it all up, but we also work with a lot of our clients on how they're going to promote the tool, and they often will promote the tool on their website. I know the folks in Howard County, I think I have a little video here down here. There it is. When Howard County did it, they did kind of a big kind of press announcement where the commissioners did an announcement actually in an area where there were some potholes. So they kind of announced the app. They had some visuals about the app. And at the same, after they did it, they actually showed how you fill a pothole. Sometimes folks will do, in addition to doing media-related things, they might put information about it in utility bills that go out or newsletters. The folks that, you know, do a good job promoting this, and I can, if you have 1 second, I can show you Howard County is kind of a good example. And I didn't have this queued up, but I can get to it pretty quickly, is to show you that Howard County probably launched their solution about 5 months ago now, and I'm going to go into their account to show you what it looks like. At least I hope I am. I might not be able to do that quickly. Maybe I'm not going to be able to do this so quickly. So I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I want to highlight it is they did a really good job because probably they're getting several hundred requests per month, but the distribution is pretty much 25% by phone calls and 75% using these channels. And I think the reason for that is they did a really good job at introducing the solution not just as a tool that residents can use, but the commissioners positioned it as something that they themselves will use as well. And I think once you kind of make that correlation besides this is a tool for everyone, it really resonates. And the impact for those guys has been very good.
This is Janelle Redding. I'm one of the supervisors. I really kind of push Greg to wanting to do this, and partially because I'm one of the people you talk about that I think Greg dreads when I go on a bicycle ride around the county because I start text messaging him with photos and things that you can't see in a car. And sometimes when I do road drive arounds, I do the exact same thing, not in my on my bicycle. One of the things that I think that we will need to consider is that often people don't know what city they're in or if they're in the county. And so, you know, the Metropolitan Planning Organization, our planning organization for the urban area, they have become kind of a one-stop for problems with pedestrians and bicycles, that if a light won't trigger, you can't get it to trigger on your bike or whatnot, or a sign's down, or there's mud on the trail, you report it to the MPO, and then they reroute it to whichever city or county actually owns that part of the trail. And I think that's a little bit of our problem. While the county has 920 miles of roads, people will invariably, they don't want to carry like 5 or 6 apps on their phone, one for the county, one for Iowa City, one for Coralville. And so I think we need to kind of talk with our partners to figure out if there is a way to electronically have an app for Johnson County that involves the cities also. Because often people don't know where they are. If you're on a trail or even some roads, unless you're pretty good, you may not know which city you're in or whether you're in the unincorporated area. And so have you had an example where multiple governments are using the same app?
Yeah, actually, Pinellas County is a good example of that. So in Pinellas County, they're using it because primarily they want to get issues related to that are the county responsibility. But there are some big cities in Pinellas County, and one of them is St. Petersburg. So if I was to put myself here on this app and put myself into St. Petersburg, which I'm going to do here, the idea being that if I'm in St. Petersburg, Florida, which is also a client of CQuickFix, what happens if I go to report an issue here? So I'm going to say the issue that I want to report is at this location here. Click done. I'm going to say that's where I am. If I go to report an issue now, because our system is geodynamic, and what that means is we can have overlapping boundaries that could be either, in this case, it's a boundary for St. Petersburg, which is a smaller area, and then a boundary of Pinellas County. And what we can do now is if I pick an address in St. Petersburg, I can display custom service request categories that will go directly to the city of St. Petersburg. And then I can also have a set of Pinellas County service request types that are services that are specifically delivered within this area. And what St. Pinellas County can do is say, all right, within someone picks an address in St. Petersburg, I want these 4 service request types visible because those are the services we deliver there. But now if they pick an address that's in an unincorporated area of Pinellas County, I want a much larger set of service requests because we do everything there. And so it can be very geodynamic that the address drives what request categories are visible based off the services delivered at that spot.
So does the system then route the request? Let's say I have a road issue and I'm in St. Petersburg, and the GIS has targeted me there, GPS, sorry. Does it route that road issue then to the city, or does the county have to physically route it on a computer?
It depends how we set it up. So we can support either boundaries, like I'm showing you here for, this is Ann Arbor, Michigan. So we can either do a boundary that represents a, a defined area, or we could do boundaries that represent road shape files. So instead of doing a large area, we could say, you know what, Johnson County is only responsible for issues on county roads. So we could do a shape file that represents just county roads with probably a buffer of about 25 feet on each side. And if someone picks an address that falls on one of those roads, Johnson County service request categories would be visible. But if they pick an address now that's on a city street, your service, Johnson County service request would not be visible because you don't manage that street. So the answer really is we can support we can set up the system a lot of different ways based off of what services you deliver.
So
does that make sense?
I think so. So in the Pinellas County example, they are your client, right?
Correct.
And then they have some sort of agreement with their cities. But if I am in that city and I mark a road problem, the computer, your system, is routing that actually to the city.
Yeah. So in the example I'm showing you here, Pinellas County is a client of CQuickFix, but so is St. Petersburg. So both those entities are basically using our service as a shared service to support both the county and the city.
Okay.
Now, if I was to report an issue in, say, Clearwater, Florida, which is within Pinellas County, but we currently do not have a working relationship directly with the city. What can happen there is a service request can get routed to the county, and then the county can just forward it to the city, or the county could set it up as someone could submit a request for the city specific, and it would trigger an email directly to them. They wouldn't have our CRM that I showed you on the back end for managing the request, but it could automatically route the alert to whoever should receive it within the city, letting them know about it.
All right. That makes sense. Thank you.
This is John Etheridge, one of the other supervisors. I just have a quick question. How do you, because you mentioned trails, you guys do GPS or is it just addresses?
We do by GPS. So what we do is we capture the latitude and longitude coordinates, and then we're associating the closest address to those coordinates using Google.
What if you, I mean, because we have trails that go where there are no addresses, they're just parcels of land. Would you guys just go by that area, or would you take it to the nearest road?
It'll take you to the nearest road. When folks have like large areas like that, that's usually a good place to use secondary questions. So if you go, so a secondary question can be, now please include the nearest cross street, or please include, the nearest park. So when you have some spot where like it's a big open area, that's where you can use secondary questions to have the person give more specific information to help you find that issue.
Okay,
in North Carolina, Raleigh's a client, and they have some big parks. And people do report trail issues about trees leaning over parks and things. And that's what they do. They include secondary questions that say, this is a park-related issue. Please please provide the park name as well as the closest location on the trail.
Okay. Because I was going to say, yeah, that helps. Thank you.
Great.
Any other questions?
Did anybody talk about cost here yet? Or
they know it.
You guys know it? Okay. We don't need Jeff for that then.
Well, yeah, Jeff, if you want to, do you mind talking about what you had laid out to us from a cost standpoint?
Yeah. What I had done is I put together for the most part, the traditional pricing that would be for an entity. Our pricing is for the most part based off of population size. And what I did is I put together a proposal that took our standard pricing. I put a discount in for the county, the Association of Counties, essentially, in Iowa, just because there's a lot of them, and you would be our first county client in the state, and we'd like to recognize the fact that you'd be the first one in the state doing that. And then I had included additional discount that we already had running in place for end of the year. So essentially, instead of being $10,000 annually, which is what it would normally be, it would be $6,000. And like I mentioned, it would usually take somewhere between 30 to 60 days for your account to be ready to launch. Now, you don't have to launch in that time frame. You may decide, we're going to do some more internal testing, or we've got to save this and do it around another event. But that's generally the time frame and pricing.
Jeff, a couple more questions about that pricing. So $6,000 annually, is there a contract?
Correct.
For how long?
Well, I set it for 1 year, and then the terms and conditions basically have a maximum increase of 10% year over year.
Okay.
Over the $6,000 or over the $10,000?
The $6,000.
Okay. Thank you.
So, So we have some ideas here, and again, we're just here to get the demonstration, and from here, I think we'll put this back on a work session and have further discussion.
I have one more question, Jeff, and you were able to, through your app, route people to other county functions other than just the C-Click Fix option? I see that's what Pinellas did.
What you can do, make sure I'm answering the right question, were you referring to these buttons as to where these can be directed to?
Yes.
Yeah. So these can be whatever you'd like them to be. So these could direct you to YouTube or to your local library or to third-party websites that show things to do in Johnson County. So these can really direct to whatever you'd like them to be.
That's what I was wondering, is if you supported those.
But we're always open to ideas about additional icons that would be helpful.
And you support those. That's because I was wondering if Pinellas had this already and you're just a button on theirs, or do you support these?
Right. So these are from the CRM. You have the ability to add these buttons and take them away whenever you like. So while our team is here to support you to do that, mm-hmm. we want the ability to do this within your control.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions right now? I think thank you again for the demonstration. We appreciate that very much. And Greg and our IT director, Bill Horning, will be in communication with you. All right?
Thanks, Jeff.
Merry Excellent. Christmas. Thank you very much for your time today. And have a safe and wonderful holiday.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
Take care.
So how does the board want to proceed as far as direction for Greg? I think that what I want to do is just actually go on and play with it a little bit. And so I just need a little bit of time to do that. And then maybe some analysis, a white page on what you like, what you don't like. Bill, what's supportive, what's not supportive. You know, you have I'm not going to say the words, but the certain kind of detector that determines if something's
well, how this compares?
Or not.
I mean, we know there are other companies in this market, and how does C-Click Fix compare to them in terms of, you know, cost and performance and all that kind of stuff? I'd like to know that.
And that's one thing actually I was asking about is because Johnson County has been looking at a potential app, and I'm like, for $6,000 or around there to do an app and to get this seems pretty decent up front, but I mean, I would definitely be on the same boat as Terrence asking, you know, I want to definitely take a look at other websites that they're already doing and how these apps work.
Well, or at least to get a recommendation
from you guys.
I don't know how much time I'm going to have to spend, frankly, scouting all these out, but
I'm gonna leave that up to you guys. I mean, I'll scout it out because I will be a big user. But
I would be too. So
I mean, and I do want us to figure out how the cities are able to get information and if they want to partner, because it seems like to me that if they partner, they can get it direct. If they didn't, something could be set up so they're emailed, and remotely, I mean, not that Greg or someone has to go in and do it, but that the system would do it. But I just think if we bought the same app, we would all be better off. And if they're about to do this, I mean, we originally kind of looked at trying to develop something in the house, and that just wasn't possible. And I think the auditor's office on that voter app, I can't remember what it cost, but
it was more than six.
It was way more than six, but partially because nobody had done it. Mm-hmm. Where roads and reporting stuff like this is much more common.
This price is better than I thought.
Right, and he said year end. So does he really mean year end, or can we have a 30-day extension? Because today is the 23rd.
He's been pitching that number to me for a couple of months, and he's always extended okay. that. He may not or may.
He works with governments. He knows we don't work super quickly.
We have a county attorney looking
at it. My feeling is I think they're very interested in getting us to install the app because then they can use that as a sales tool to the other county.
And we don't mind being the first. I mean, it's but it's exactly what people need that are not using a flip phone, John. But, you know, it's just I use that mobile app for the voting. A lot of times when people ask me, where can I vote today? And I'm like, oh, let me tell you. Now, it was only the Android version for this, but, you know, not the iPhone. But I used it a ton this election cycle. And I think people will use it over and over and over again. And so this seems like a good price. It looks like a great package, but beyond that, I can't tell you much about it.
What population did they, excuse me, Ron, what population did you guys give them? Was it just rural unincorporated Johnson County, or you gave them the 140,000?
I did not give him any population. With their conversation, I'm sure he just probably got online somewhere and searched it. And
it would be for everybody. I mean,
I'm sure it is based on a county population.
Yeah.
But if a city bought in, mm-hmm. they would be able to put other categories they wanted in right. there and get a lot more valuable data mm-hmm. than somebody saw a pothole or down sign in Coralville on corner.
I think it'd be great, especially for a city, to get all these reports and be able to pull them pretty quickly. So, Rod, sorry for interrupting. You were
saying I was just going to ask how are we moving forward then?
I mean,
well, I mean, we have a very engaging resident population in Johnson County. So I would agree with your assessments that I think there are lots of people that could use it for many different things. I mean, you saw up there that it doesn't just limit mm-hmm. that application to the Secondary Roads Department. It can go to conservation, maybe. It can apply to, there was a zoning activity up there where somebody could take a photo and send it forward. And so I mean, it's a very powerful application, more than what I think Secondary Roads would probably need. But there are many different, you know.
That's one thing I really liked about it was the ability to have other buttons in there, because then we could use this essentially as the Johnson County app. You go to the Johnson County app and you can do the roads function, or you can do a budget function, or you can do claims function. I mean, there are so many things that, because he had, what, at least 8 in there, that you could put other functions and tie that right to that.
And you wouldn't have to use them in the beginning when you weren't
exactly
ready.
Exactly.
I guess where I am is, Bill, do we have $6,000 in technology reserves that we could put to this if we put it back in next year's budget? So I would like to say, Greg and Bill, see if the guy will give us a 30-day extension on his pricing. Talk to the ITs of the major cities if they're interested at all. Investigate whether this is a product you like.
Have Andy Chappell.
And bring in the county attorney's office and negotiate a contract. I mean, we gave Greg this goal, and then we didn't put, you know, we didn't define what we meant by it. And I think we should give him the tools to finish his goal. I don't want to recreate the wheel. They've already done that for major counties and cities. And
I did a United States search for companies. I Googled it. I, you know, searched many, many search engines and cities, and there, believe it or not, I couldn't find another company that offered a package like this for what we're looking at. I mean, in most cases, they had simple things like pothole app, but that was all you did was just...
Well, somebody said a white page. You know, give us a couple paragraphs on that and give us something we can vote on. I mean, I'm ready to move forward. I just, there are still going to be some questions that I'll want to ask you guys, but we don't have to do that today.
Okay. We can contact Jeff as soon as we get out of here to see if that's a doable continuation of what he was proposing to us. And I hope that he would nod his head and agree with yes.
Okay. Okay, good direction. Quickly, Greg, also on the agenda, and we're not going to get into a deep debate here, but just we have lighting of secondary roads near urban areas, and we got a request from City of Coralville to look into addressing Oakdale Boulevard and Dubuque Street and who would share responsibility, things of that nature. And again, I don't want to get too deep here, given the nature and the time here, but we probably want to put this on maybe some discussion when we have the 5-year road plan. Would that be a good time? And then people can bring some ideas or suggestions. And what we would need from you is primarily just some information about what our current policy is in regards to our lighting out there. I know we have some ordinances in regards to light as well and light pollution. And so some things of that nature. And then maybe look and see if there's other communities like Cedar Rapids or Linn County. Do they have any of those kind of arrangements?
As well as I would throw one more thing in there, and that is we got Oakdale Boulevard and Dubuque Street, but there are a number of other intersections that Johnson County has that are highly urban, and just kind of have a general list of potential other areas that that if we do something here, we may end up doing something over here too, and just kind of, you know, general list. And
okay, does seem reasonable for everybody?
If I could, just as a absolutely, I'm glad to hear this. It's, you know, we've kind of found out about this last Friday that there. I mean, we've had requests for lights at other intersections, and we've stayed steadfast with past practice on this. Due to the timeliness of us having our first five-year-old program, we are, I don't know that we'll be able to be prepared to do the research for this and then also set that up with our five-year. If it could be a recommendation for me, could we set this up as a separate, maybe a smaller work session with you all at sometime after that, if that's okay?
I was just trying to, well, and, so you don't have to come in so often.
I mean, the policy, frankly, is that we don't do it. You know, so if we want to change that policy, we need to...
Well, and the other thing is, Greg, I mean, I need you to come back with a list of ideas, but it doesn't have to be lighting in your traditional.
Absolutely.
I mean, these new signs, the LED signs that are solar that say, you can get them to say whatever you want, but it could be intersection ahead. I mean, the problem is that both the cars and the bicycles and don't realize there's an intersection there. So it doesn't have to be your traditional urban light with, you know, making it daylight there. It could be something that's a warning system that people recognize that, in, you know, using solar and LED lights. I mean, but I for one, am not going to be supportive of lighting up every rural intersection. I mean, it's just, people live in the country because they like dark skies, and I'm not going to be polluting them. But there are some intersections that I just think aren't particularly safe, and we maybe can consider some other options.
I was going to say the same thing. I don't think we want to light up every subdivision intersection, with whether it's a Highway 1 or whether it's another road of some sort. But to me, this one in specific, and maybe we need to kind of get a feel for how many other intersections like Oakdale and Dubuque Street are. A major intersection like that carries a lot more traffic and is more than a collector. So I would say maybe look at see how many of those there are.
All the input you're giving us is exactly what staff and I have discussed, and certainly we'll be evaluating this and bringing back options and recommendations and all kinds of fun stuff. So looking forward to the future conversation on this. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Okay, next on the agenda, and thanks for your patience, fellows. We've got plans for collaboration between Iowa City Area Development, ICAD Group, and Cedar Rapids Metro Economic Alliance. And we had a conversation just this past week about what's going on out there, and you know where the county's investment is, and some concerns about the investment for Johnson County and things of that nature. So if you can introduce yourselves and for the auditor's office, and we'll get things started, okay?
Sure. Martin Nolte, president of the Iowa City Area Development Group.
Tom Gedkin, chairperson.
So I appreciate the opportunity to be here. ICAD had a special board meeting a couple weeks ago, and it was unfortunately at the same time where you were having your joint meeting with the city of Iowa City. So Supervisor Sullivan was unable to attend. He serves on our board. So happy to answer any questions about the concept of the joint venture and hopefully dispel any.
Mark, let me so folks know, I did jump in at the very end and just before the vote was cast. So I wasn't present for much discussion, but I did get in at the tail end. And for some reason I was not on an ICAD email list. Eric was very apologetic and seems to have gotten it. but he seems to have gotten it fixed. I've gotten a number of emails since. He did some tests, and there's nothing wrong with our system or apparently yours, but somehow I just wasn't there. So, yeah, but whatever the case, anyway, that was another thing that added some confusion to us around this topic, but that's resolved. So,
Mark, I was the ICAD representative before Ron, and I thought we had this conversation about merging the agencies, and you were directed to work together. And from my knowledge, I mean, I'm no longer on the board, but I read everything you send, you've been doing that. You've been sharing trips. You've got a shared staff. I mean, maybe you could just list all the things you're sharing, and joint ventures, and so I don't understand what the difference is with this. If we're not going to merge the, if the ultimate goal isn't to merge the two organizations, and if that is the ultimate goal, then I'm going to change my opinion about the county's budgeting. If that's the ultimate goal, I mean, I'm going to be very frank. I will not be voting to invest money in economic development that's not in Johnson County. It just won't. So, you know, I don't know, you know, if there are two other people who agree with me, but I cannot tax the people of Johnson County so that Hiawatha can get businesses. It's just not going to happen. I won't be voting for that budget. So if that's the ultimate goal of whoever is driving this, to get rid of ICANN and have one, you know, creative corridor economic development group, then I think the public's investment here is, in my opinion, should end. And this should be a corporate-driven organization, because I don't see how I can possibly tax people and Lone Tree to do that. But if the goal is to work together, to collaborate, to eliminate duplications and to share staff in share, you know, trips, you know, corporate visits, if you're going to be there anyway, why don't you visit some of theirs? And I mean, I'm all for finding those efficiencies. And I thought that's what you were already doing. So I really don't understand where this is coming from and what it means, frankly.
And that's why you're here.
I came on as chairperson last July. Before I took the incoming chair, one of the things, Janelle, you're right. We've been I would call messing around with merger for the last, I would say, 4 or 5 years, and probably specifically most in the last 2 years. And I said once and for all, let's investigate whether that's what we want to do or not. I said I didn't want to go through 2 years of being chair with this always bubbling up as an issue. I just didn't want to deal with it. If the board wants to merge or do something else, let's do it. If we don't, let's do that. So I met with not all of the board members, but most of the board members. I met with you, Rod, about it started about a year ago, late last winter, and then into the spring. I met with 24 of, say, 27 board members. I didn't get to, literally, I just didn't get to everybody. And from ICAD and Nancy Kasparek from CRMIA did the same thing. And we talked about this with our executive committees prior to this, is we're going to poll our respective boards on how collaborative do we want the two ends of the corridor to be? And it's a fairly open question. We did that. And then we came back to our executive committee and then our board on multiple occasions in terms of what we found. And most recently, I reported, or probably the first time I reported back to the entire board was in July at our strategic planning, in terms of what we found as a group and where do we go from here. The board at that time said, let's continue to explore that, and that's what we did. I came back to the executive committee. We formed, I would call it an exploratory committee of, how do we want that collaboration and what do we want it to do, and specifically what would the purpose be? Merger talks were had primarily at the north end. And I would say they are more, when we look at our board makeups in terms of who's for merger and who's against merger, if that's the issue, I would say the majority of the members of Cedar Rapids would like to merge. They look at it as a, how do we foster economic development in an overall corridor? I would say the majority of the board on this side don't want to merge, but both majorities want to collaborate better, and not necessarily, Janelle, from an efficiency perspective. We've tried that on occasion, and that hasn't worked. Most recently, we shared a Yeah, an agreement. We shared an employee with Cedar Rapids Metro Economic Alliance where we basically bought time from them to do some synchronous interviews. And we terminated that agreement.
Mid-December.
Yeah, mid-December. Mark came back to the executive committee and just said, this isn't working. We said, hey, let's explore that. Why isn't it working? And then Mark came back in December, and we agreed that it wasn't working, that it was just literally asking the staff to share employees to be efficient wasn't working. And especially in this case, there was a reason for that. Existing industry, from ICAD's perspective, and I agree with it, is very important in terms of what they're doing, where they're going, are they growing their jobs, are there problems, those sorts of things. To actually outsource that to an employee of somebody else's organization to get that level of information just wasn't going to work. We should have recognized that perhaps early on. Mark, who was good, brought that to us, and we terminated that. But the four areas that this joint group got together and discussed were the creative quarter brand. We needed some group that was not just one side or the other to foster that brand and keep that going. Market the region, utilize the region for workforce development. And then maybe to this point, what are the metrics that we need to put in place from a corridor perspective so we're all aware that a growth in Hiawatha may be good for Johnson County or Lone Tree? We don't know if that's the case yet. We suspect that might be the case. But how do we develop that story and those metrics? So we did meet as a board 2 weeks ago. It was not a unanimous decision to go forward with creation of a joint venture or the exploration of a creation of a joint venture. We had those four items. We spent about an hour and a half discussing both the background of where this is coming from, as well as what specifically is on the table for ICAD to approve at that point in time. And specifically what we approved in going forward is, and I'll read it, and this isn't the exact one from the minutes. This is what was actually... You got the minutes?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So you know what then...
there was an amendment.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right.
We have that.
And so we've appointed, or will appoint, we don't have those three members yet selected or volunteered, three members of the ICAD board to negotiate the terms of a joint venture that would encompass or may encompass those four aspects that I just outlined.
Tom, I'm going to get out just a little bit into the weeds, not too far, but you know, we've been discussing this branding for years,
right,
and a joint venture with ICAD. You know, and Mark has been doing an excellent job in our particular area, and I understand they perhaps want to expand that up into Cedar Rapids. I don't want to dilute it to the point where we're going to lose our effectiveness in Johnson County area. But on the same time, when you talk about the corridor, I get a lot of feedback, particularly outlying areas, where they say, well, we're part of that corridor as well, and we're being ignored. I think we heard that down in the Kelowna, Frytown area. You know, we're providing farm products to your communities, and we're not being included in these discussions and what's going on. I don't know how we draw those lines and pull all that together.
Mark, you can speak to the ICAD service area and the communities that we service currently.
Yeah, we're trying to figure out how to involve more of the rural communities. I think some of the things, the local food movement is really one of the areas where I think we can harness some inertia. We've got United Natural Foods here. We've got some other companies that give us a reason to exist. So. And then also trying to extend that entrepreneurship brand, because we need all the residents of the small communities feeling like they're part of the entrepreneurial movement and can start businesses too, and how we get capital to flow to those areas too. I think our best economic success over the coming years is going to be to maintain the companies we have here and help new companies get started. Our success won't come from outside companies choosing to come to Lone Tree or something like that. We've got to build wealth in the communities we've got. And so part of this creative quarter brand extends to that.
So you think a brand with Iowa City area and Cedar Rapids Marion area as one is going to be a unit that benefits everyone, or just maybe from business perspective, maybe. But
well, it's for those four purposes, Pat. That there are some, as we've learned and as we know, the work we do local with existing industry has to remain local. I mean, outsourcing that doesn't make any sense. But when we look at branding the corridor from an outsider's perspective, Iowa City or Coralville may not, you know, it may be difficult to market a smaller community like that as opposed to a corridor. If we can get a company interested in the corridor, having a larger metropolitan population, we may get in doors that we're currently not getting into, or may be seen by others that we're currently not being seen by.
You know, I've been a little, and Mark knows this, I've been a little skeptical of the whole regional branding thing simply because it reminds me of George Costanza trying to give himself a nickname. I'm not sure how effective that always is, but it was interesting. You know, I actually, and I think there were only a couple of board members that attended the meeting that was a joint venture between Cedar Rapids and Iowa City Economic Development groups, where we had the people in who do the who help companies locate places. Yeah, there weren't too many of us up there, but. Right. They said something there that I thought was interesting and in a way backed up my thinking a bit, where they said, creative corridor doesn't mean anything to me. I need a state. There's 25 creative corridors out there. They might not even be just in the U.S. It's another English-speaking country, obviously, but it could be in Australia or Canada that calls itself the creative corridor. And, you know, if I don't have a state associated with it, I don't even know what you're talking about.
And Ron, I'm an accountant, so branding to me, you know, I guess I would tend to agree with that. But one of the things in my conversations with that same group, they were looking at how do you come together to do more. I mean, that was the message I got loud and clear: is not necessarily get your act together, because that's not what they said, but the more you can do together,
right,
benefits you. And remember who we were sitting
with. Well, like advertising our whole workforce as the whole corridor workforce makes a lot of sense.
That's make a lot of sense.
Because that's our labor shed.
That's right.
So, yeah, I agree with you.
Right now with Kirkwood.
Yeah.
But the issue, and again, this was not, this is what we took in December was a step. The big step, if we choose to take it and vote that way, is creating that joint venture. There's a lot of meat that yet has to be put on this bone before it's brought back to the ICAD board for vote.
Can I ask a few questions on that? Because I actually, I made a long list. I mean, I have so many questions. You know, I guess I'm wondering what the joint venture means in terms of what's the investment, financial and personal, on, you know, staff, in terms of what kind of investment will ICAD be making, you know, how are we going to measure success is real unclear to me on some of these things. How are we going to measure return on investment on some of these things is going to be really hard for, I think, to measure. I literally have a list of 30 questions that I won't read through, but you get the idea.
No, I get the idea. And I think your questions will be similar, I think, to any board member on ICAD, same exact questions, both before and after the meeting, you know, that are still unanswered. And that's what this group then has to, this is not a done deal by any stretch of the imagination. So let's take the money piece of it. One of the premises we had going in is this is a 50-50 joint venture. We didn't want to be, if we're going into, say, a collaboration, we didn't want it to be, say, 70-30, where, you know, based on population or something like that. Not that we didn't trust it, but basically coming down to we just didn't want to be in that position. So our budget is give or take $800,000 a year, you know, give or take. If we came up with a purpose that ends up, you know, requiring, say, $1 million, to put $500,000 of ICAD's funds into a joint venture, probably is just not in the cards. I mean, then we wouldn't be able to do, you know, what we need to do locally. So a lot of the a lot of those decisions have yet to be made, just in terms of, you know, even what are the, what's the amount of resources that we'd be able to dedicate to this collaboration. Mm-hmm. So we've dedicated resources before from the standpoint of that shared shared employee. But, you know, how much is enough? How much is too much? And this group is charged with figuring that out. And I have no clue on how long.
And so then that will come back for another vote to the board. So the questions that I have then, and I'm assuming my colleagues probably have some of the same kinds of questions. I haven't shared this with them, but I can. Do you want that list of questions? I mean, what's the best way for us to proceed?
Well, you're a board member.
Right.
I'd be happy to come and sit down with you, Mark, and I could do that. And or those will come up at future board meetings. But I'd come and sit down with you and just have a discussion on that.
Okay. In particular. That'd be great.
So will you be back in 6 months having voted without inviting us to the meeting and tell us we're merging?
I would imagine Rod's on the board.
He wasn't invited to this meeting. And it was done on top of a joint meeting with Iowa City that had been scheduled for 4 months.
And Tom Marcus was in that meeting as well, and he discussed that in specifics, that he said, hey, Rod and I are not going to be able to attend. We almost postponed it. Tom said, don't postpone it on our account. And he was not speaking for you.
No, he didn't know that I hadn't gotten the message.
He had anticipated that you had.
Right, right.
He said, there should be enough time, if you can have the vote at this time, that we should be able to step out. And we'll be informed, thinking that you would have this.
Right.
And then we would have it informed. We'd be still able to vote.
But the ultimate question is, will you be coming back in 6 months saying that the organizations are merging?
No.
Of the $800,000 that your budget, how much of that is public dollars?
36%.
36%? So without the 36%, how would your organization function?
It would be very difficult to function as we currently have.
I guess I'm under the similar impression, I mean, as Rod and Janelle. I don't mean to interrupt you, Janelle, but I just wanted to say I'm always concerned about sharing an advocate when we're competing. I mean, how does that go for really any side, especially the side with lower numbers? So that is my big concern going into this is, I mean, ICAD's the advocate for this area, so depend on you guys to essentially sell this area and promote it. And, you know, have people locate here versus Hiawatha or Cedar Rapids. So that's why I say I'm concerned about sharing an advocate. And right now I just am like, Rod, have a lot of questions, and I won't be here for the vote or for the information or for the answer for those questions. But I do have a lot of concerns about this.
Well, Tom, I'll take the list that I have. I'll make sure that everybody gets it, and then if they want to add questions, if they have the same questions, whatever, I'm sure I'll have a plenty good list. And then if we want to get together,
I would suggest that before even our next board meeting.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds good.
I guess my problem is not actually with the four things here. I have concerns about the Creative Corridor brand. I don't think it says anything. I think it was created by people who want to sell advertising, and they're trying to get us all to invest in it so they can sell us more advertising. I drive by the billboard that says, "Welcome to the Creative Corridor," and I have absolutely no idea what that means. It seems a lot more like tourism than it does economic development, but, you know, I have a lot of problems with that, and so I've been, frankly, and it's all on audio and video, reluctant for the county to invest money in that. But I do believe we are a region. I do believe that we all benefit, that we share the workforce, we share the region, that, you know, I know that Whirlpool, ICAD gave us numbers on that, where the Whirlpool workers actually come from and where they own houses. And so even though that's not in our county, that Johnson County benefits. But I do not believe we can give up our identity. And I was reminded of this recently by someone who said, basically, what makes you unique is what you should celebrate. And the desire to include everybody can dilute your original message. And, I mean, frankly, Iowa City is a very, very cool place for people to be entertained. And the county itself is growing into a county identity. But I don't have anything in common with the people in Hiawatha or Marion, and I wouldn't live there if that was the last place on earth. It's not anything against them. It's just I want to live here. I want to be here. I believe that this is the best place to live. And so for me to want to market beyond a relationship of sharing and collaboration, I see that as our competition. And I cannot sit here and raise property taxes on people in order to give money to Linn County. I just can't. And I will not be voting for any budget that includes that. And so if what we're talking about is an investment of whatever, of your $800,000 in order to fund this creative corridor, which I have no idea what it means and where it is on the planet, I think we really need to think about this carefully, because you're operating on a shoestring as it is. I mean, how do you carve out more money? And maybe these 13 people who voted yes to do this need to cough up some more money to the organization, because I don't know how you're going to have any money to invest in Linn County's desire to take us over. I mean, because that's how I see this. And that's where I am, and I just thought you should know that.
Other comments?
I think we have very different philosophies about what economic development is, and I'm hopeful that through the process of this joint venture, we can have that discussion and see where we align and maybe where there are opportunities to work together. But I think this process will either help us figure that out or understand if maybe we're just too different in what our approaches are. So I'm trying to be very optimistic that the process of going through these discussions would be beneficial.
I enjoyed the conversation. I this is from one perspective that has always said, let's give ICAD half the money they're asking, and let's hold the other half to show how they're going to invest in rural economic development. And I've used that for the last few years. And the board, I didn't win, and the board has given the $50,000 and said, go do good. And I suspect we'll continue to identify that as an investment that we'll want to continue to do, because it is our investment of economic development for Johnson County, and we just have to show to residents, particularly outside of the TIF districts that are actually capturing the tax base right now for 20 years. So it's really kind of a tough sell to go out there and tell everybody, particularly in the rural unincorporated area, here's where that money went, and oh, by the way, it's in Iowa City, oh, or Coralville, or North Liberty. Oh, by the way, it's also in a TIF that they're keeping those revenues for 20 years. I also think that I don't quite share the same philosophy as Janelle does on some of the issues of a joint venture, of an opportunity to work as a corridor. I actually have bought into that a little more. But it doesn't work if, as gets back to a conversation I just had a little bit ago, it doesn't work if Iowa City and Coralville and North Liberty and Solon and Swisher, as everyone's building these big giant walls around their communities and only investing in dollars that only impact if it's inside that city. I mean, we heard a conversation from a gentleman making a presentation to the Iowa City Coralville Convention and Visitors Bureau, and that just off-the-cuff remark that he was asked of, is there anything that you can say about the community? He's like, yeah, you're cities don't seem to be. In essence, it seemed like your cities are kind of doing their own thing. And ICAD has been always that entity that says, no, 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 let's think more as a region. And it might not necessarily just be Johnson County. I know that you've worked closely with economic development groups from Tipton and West Branch and West Liberty. And I mean, so it does go outside of the realm of just Johnson County, and the investment is for that. My hunch is probably a bit of a compromise just as a safety net if the board wants to move forward. It likely will be that when we look at allocating quality of life dollars or economic development dollars, it likely will have some contingency that says if this goes forward and ICAD does merge, that we probably would spend less and probably hold on to those dollars at least on a quarterly basis or something of that nature just as a safety net after July 1. And that probably is the best way to compromise a little bit, just as a safety net.
But I mean, the merger, just to be clear, merger's not on the table.
Right.
It's just a matter, are you saying it's a matter of the scope of the joint venture?
I think that's just the conversation we'll have, you know, as a board to determine that. But, you know, it's nice to kind of get into the loop. I actually will be replacing Rod at the middle of the year for your board, you know, because we do a
July 1.
On a cycle basis here. So so if there's any opportunities to get all of us on board throughout the process, it's really important to do so. Yeah.
And I'd echo that. To me, you know, we have a representative there, but information is so important in this. It seems like we don't always get all the information we need, no matter whether it was ICAD or something else that we probably need in our decision-making. I don't know how we get that all back. Because I can attend a meeting, interpret one way, and someone else can interpret a little bit differently.
Yeah. And it's not uncommon that, you know, we do share board minutes, board issues, things of that nature. I went to your website quite often, and it was not mentioned. I couldn't find anything.
On this?
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it was just a bit silent. And so when things get like that and then rumors start, so it's really nice to have you in here. Give us an explanation. I know Rod has given a response and some concerns that he's identified as one of your board members. And so, you know, it's good to have that conversation. And
well, we certainly could share our minutes with the entire board.
Other folks will let me know if what they think, you know, if they have the same questions I have, different questions. And then, you know, to the extent that we can meet and talk about that in greater detail, we could also invite in one more supervisor. That way we still don't reach our quorum, but one more person gets to hear. So we'll try to work that out. Maybe when, as I'm assuming, Tom, you'll be sending an email trying to arrange something, and we'll try to get two people there. Yeah.
And there's quite a bit of rural economic development that, you know, we've identified in our strategic priorities and some of the new philosophies on from solar energies to country inns to some of the flexibilities that we're starting to ease up on some of our planning and zoning things that I think could be an opportunity. Hoop houses. I mean, there's a lot of different things, particularly in the southern portion of Johnson County, that we should try to take advantage of and not lose any more cheese factories and things like that. So, or what to even do about an empty building. So,
well, kind of also back to a comment Janelle made, and I shared this, and I don't know, I can't remember if I left the documents. I work for ACT, and as the CFO, I've got access to, you know, say, payroll data and things like that. I know where our people come from. Many of them are coming from the north side of the corridor. Many are coming from the south side of the corridor, all the way down to as far as Keokuk, I believe, all the way east as far as Bettendorf, and west as far as Newton. You know, Janelle, you're right. Employees go where they go because they want to either be there from a community perspective or for whatever reason, family reasons, or some of it could be economic. Couldn't sell a house. You know, I live in this house, and if I tried to sell it, I can't. So they look to various places to work, and work happens to be where it's at, whether it's in Iowa City or whether it's in Coralville. And we've got, even in those two communities, as we all know, we've got some issues that we need to work through. you know, in terms of when economic development occurs and where is it, where it goes, and does it really make economic sense to do something versus another? I believe this organization has something to say about that and something to lead about that and probably can and should step up and do that. And we're working on some of those things in regards to that.
That's great to hear.
I mean, one last comment is that same concept then of we have responsibility within our charter for economic development in certain areas. How far do we need to go to broaden that, and when is the question that we're trying to answer through this process?
And when my comments about the TIF districts and you know where we want to encourage growth and development to occur, where the infrastructure is, the water, the sewer, the fire response, I mean, all of those things that are part of. But what's really, I mean, and we generate dollars from property taxes, and when the cities do capture that, that's one thing. When they're holding it for 20 years, when they don't need to, that's really frustrating. But really what's hurting us right now is the amount of housing that now is being put into TIF districts. And again, that tax base that used to be shared is now being held into even housing. I mean, communities are almost putting 60-70% of their entire cities are now in TIF districts. And so I would like to see economic development and particularly you folks identify that how do we all benefit? Well, it's getting harder and harder to benefit in waiting 20 years if cities are going to just basically take all of the money from the property tax base and quite frankly hoard it and utilize it for themselves. And again, it gets back into that city-only philosophy that somehow ICAD can help us break that. It'd be nice.
I asked Andy to bring this up so we could play the video. You can get the video. There's a link down a little lower. Right there in the red is the video. And I'm going to say this not because two of Mark's bosses are in the room, but Mark and his team have the heartbeat of this county. And they understand that we're quirky and different.
Oh, good. It's a jib jab.
and they get that the people who choose to live and work and locate their businesses here do so because of our quality of life, and that a music festival is just as important as a tax incentive. And I think that is a difficult concept for people to buy into who believe in smokestacks and giving billion-dollar tax incentives. But people who want to live here, who want to bring their businesses here, who want to locate down on the Ped Mall with their new high-tech, they do so because it's on the Ped Mall, and it's weird, and it's quirky, and it's cool, and a little bit edgy. And I think that's how we differ from all the other counties around us, and why you will not see me living in those other counties. It's just not going to happen. I want to be able to do quirky, weird things and see quirky, weird people. And this is an example, if you can make it play. This is why I think you're the best at your business, and I don't want to share you.
I think we have an amazing opportunity right now.
Talk about workplace culture. That's
they're doing some Blue Zones exercise in here too. Well then, It'll play again. You know, I think that says more about us than any pinstripe suit, Italian loafer, high-cost dinner you could ever do in recruiting. This county is something like that. And if you want your business here, come. If you don't, we don't really want your smokestacks. And I think that's what makes us different. And I just want to parlay what we have, not try to change into something we're not. And that's just where I am, as honestly as I can be about it. So thanks for the video, for giving me a segue into where I am.
That's a good way to end it. We're like in a good mood again.
We should have shown that on television, Mark, but we'll tweet it and stuff.
So you guys will be in touch, and I'll try to see when you give me some dates who can join me, and we'll
have you send it quick here. But
okay.
It's good to see you.
Appreciate you both coming in. Happy holidays.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
All right, let's get to one more, and I think we'll take a break. And let's get into Juvenile Justice Youth Development Funding Application, RFP.
Hello, good afternoon. And I have about 10 minutes.
What are you wearing?
Oh my goodness, Sue Campney had these made. They're ornaments for our whole department.
Oh.
Spirit Winners 2014.
Nice.
Photo set.
That's nice.
Yeah, it's fun.
You should have rolled your newest employee over here.
Yeah. Who's my newest employee?
Herky, the morale officer.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we do have Herky for like another week or so. Not much longer. So I have added to the agenda today the Juvenile Justice Youth Development RFP per your request, and you should have received that in the packet. Just to give you an update, we had a subcommittee that met. There were 10 folks who served on that subcommittee. And that consisted of members of the JJYD Policy Board, as well as some members from the work group. So those would be the providers. We've met on 4 separate occasions, September through November. And during those meetings, we reviewed data. We held a meeting forum with all the JCOs, the juvenile court officers, to get feedback from them on gaps and where they see needs in the community. We reviewed some different evidence-based programs and then had some discussion. I prepared the draft RFP. It went out to all of the committee members, and everybody was in agreement on the committee with regard to this application. Again, I know historically we've awarded grants for 3 years, but it's real clear in the RFP that funding is awarded on an annual basis and future funding is contingent on availability of funds from the county, in addition to an annual review of performance measures and successful completion of the anticipated scope of work as outlined in the contract. There's not been a whole lot of change to the RFP over previous years. I think the changes really highlighted here are that the scope of services are a little more broad, and that we had some discussion about the number. There are so many different strategies to reducing juvenile delinquency, and it's all about, the core is about increasing assets in young people and families, and there's a lot of different ways that you can accomplish that. So we wanted to really leave it open to the providers to tell us what they think, where they have the expertise and what they would propose doing.
Yeah, I want to jump in, Lynette, because I'm a strong believer in this. I think we have a tendency to, I think every government does, to govern too much by anecdote. You know, somebody comes in and they say, oh, this is an outrage, and did you know this? And so the next thing you do is you respond to that. Well, and I'm not saying that people make those scenarios up, but they are a scenario. Are they representative of a bigger trend? You know, that's the kind of question we have to ask. And that's the kind of question that we did ask of DHS and juvenile court and providers. And so I think the process was really good in that regard because we made sure we're not just chasing. And we've done that in the past. We have just kind of chased things because they were they were in the news at the time or whatever. And that's really not the best way to spend the money. And so I'm pretty confident that the feedback we got is from the people that know best and that this will address that.
What? And we did, we left it broader, you know, in our previous RFP, we had specified out-of-school time. So it was very targeted. This is broader in that we're looking at family functioning, out-of-school time, supportive communities, building emotional and social and emotional competence, relationships with adults. We've looked at employment. And we provided a variety of suggested programming types. Certainly not limited to those that are identified, like youth programming or youth employment, life skills, mentoring, family support and crisis. Not limited to that, but those are some suggestions. I also provided links to evidence-based programming and some of the data sets. We also looked at our numbers, knowing that disproportionate minority contact is a concern in our community, so that's highlighted as a priority, in addition to looking at the data and the age, common age where kids are visitors to juvenile court, and highlighted that. You know, we know males are more often finding their way into the juvenile court system. Females increasingly have specific types of violations that are they're more predominant. So certainly providers have opportunity to specify and streamline services to targeted populations as well. We didn't want to limit that ability in this RFP. And I wanted to highlight too, NACO recently has been committing a lot of time to highlighting the importance of counties in terms of funding juvenile justice and juvenile justice prevention programs, recognizing the high cost of detention to communities. But not only if you're successful in keeping kids out of the juvenile court system, you're much more likely to keep them out of the adult correction system and out of the county jails. So there's been a lot of information out that NACO's put out about the cost savings to the counties by investing in prevention programming for teens and youth.
How long has the county been doing this? It was the matching funds on a grant.
It was started as a federal program. And,
yeah, I think
and
it goes back to the late 80s.
Yeah, Pat White was really instrumental in getting the board started on that and actually kind of making sure we continue to keep funding of it after we lost the match of the federal government, which actually happened when Pat and I were on the board. So it was real early in the process, and we kept it going, in part because Carol Thompson would have, you know, used that. Where's your gavel?
Well, I believe we have some of our JJYD providers that have requested to come speak with you in January about the value of their programs.
And Lynette, can you give the board the time frame that you're talking about here?
Yes, well, pending approval from you all, I thought that this would be released around January 7th, somewhere around the first week in January. I currently have February 20th as the tentative due date, pending, of course, the release date. If that gets pushed back, then we would change the due date. And then we have a committee that will review and make recommendations that would then go to the JJYD Policy Board for approval, and then it would come to you all. Their recommendation would come to you for approval.
By around April 1 or something?
Yes, by the end of March, I anticipate.
Mm-hmm. You didn't put a dollar amount in here, right?
You may be correct. Typically, we've indicated $200,000, but is that missing, Janelle?
I didn't find it.
I didn't see it.
I'm not saying it's not there somewhere and I just missed it, but I didn't find it.
Thank you for
which
that.
I actually think you need to do because we haven't approved a budget.
I agree.
You could put something like, in previous years, the board has budgeted $200,000 for this program, but budgeting for the new year is not finished at.
Well, and Andy has gone through this before, and the language is very clear that we're not obligated to ever spend a dime.
But I think it's okay to give them an idea of what we've done in the past, but we haven't budgeted anything.
Well, what I may do is put up to $200,000 maybe budgeted, and then it sets a ceiling so they know not to apply for a $500,000 program, and it says may.
And
so
I
does it mean you're locked in?
I mean, the board is in discussion about whether we need to find more money to inflation index some of these, and I don't know if it will spread to this or not. But it's been at $200,000 for 20 years, and so, I mean, maybe that is a talk we should have.
Well, the 200 has always been our match.
Right.
You know, in the early 90s or late 90s, that was it was like 600 and something thousand coming
because
in.
Of the grant, right? And so, anyway, I would be somewhat vague about the language, but you might want to give them an idea that there's not $1 million here.
Yeah.
And I'm fine with this otherwise.
Yeah, the organization or the group that went to Baltimore,
Georgetown.
Mm-hmm. Did they have a lot of say in any of this? Or?
Latasha participated on this committee as well as Joan.
Good.
Vandenberg and Chris Wyatt was involved in the JCO meeting. We have a new representative, Brandon Woods from the JCO office is the new JCO representative. But we did have three Georgetown of the five.
Great.
Participate.
Great. And so process-wise, where do we go from here? What's our, well, they make a recommendation to us?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
But we just have to, put this on next Friday to approve.
I don't think you
RFP
have in the past.
You know, RFP just go out.
Oh, yeah, we don't have to approve it. It's just your verbal, I guess, here today, so.
I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
If you put some vague language about money.
We're catching that.
Yeah, sounds good.
Nod your head, Pat.
Maybe less.
You got a lot of questions. I'll talk to her about those. But, you know, it all comes down to the application, so it's like.
And I'm glad, I mean, I think the last time we did this, we put in that scoring language that said we may not follow it. I mean, it helps us narrow the field, but other times it just becomes instinctual and all the rest of our funding streams, so.
And I believe that's
I mean, you've given us basically every out there is here.
And I just, yeah, I mean, I think that respectfully, it's ultimately the decision of the Board of Supervisors, right. Not that committee. And so that just needs to be set up front.
Yep, and I think that's outlined in there that the board makes the final decision.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Great.
Thank you so much.
Perfect. Thanks.
Hey, so
have a nice Christmas.
Yeah, you as well.
We have, according to...
if you're going to Mexico, bring vanilla back.
We're on target here to take a break. You want to be back at 1:15?
Okay.
Someone fine. Coming in at 1?
They're coming in at 1. Aren't
they? The girl.
Oh, they are.
Are coming in. Right.
At 40 minutes enough?
I need a little more time. Just, but
I mean,
it could be 10 after or whatever. If anyone just kind of try to get back here around 1, and if we have 5 of us, we'll get started. Okay.
Sounds good.
Or just right after that. Okay, that'll be the plan. Let's take a lunch break.
Anyone want chocolate before we start?
Yes.
Be careful if you say yes. You might want to hold up your glove now.
I've been known to throw it.
Yeah, she.
Yeah, let our guests get it.
Oh, come on! I wanted to see you, Peg.
Wing them.
Yeah. You just played softball in high school, and that was it?
I played 2 years of college.
You did? Okay.
2 years of basketball.
Not for now, but for later.
Yeah, pockets on.
Thank you. Thanks, Janelle.
Thank you. You are welcome.
Yeah. Make sure those bad girls get back over here.
Terrence used to have an allergy to chocolate. And so we have sweet tarts, too, but he's recently overcome it.
Took me 3 years.
No, I was going to say. I was going to say. What movie is that called, Terrence?
Princess Bride.
Princess Bride. That one.
Yes, I have overcome.
I don't know if you guys have seen it.
Everybody's seen it.
Okay.
Ever?
It's kind of funny how you described it.
Ready to get started?
Yeah.
All right, let's get started. We are back in session. This is our work session, December 23rd, and back from lunch and ready to get into item 5, which is under the county poor farm property, including but not limited to historic preservation and interpretation, some trail planning, and Grow Johnson County, a proposal for local food production. And we do have some guests here. We are being recorded by the auditor, and people are listening live. So if you could, please state your name, and so we have that for the record. And we'll go from there and give talk a little bit about the Grow Johnson County perspective and idea. So, start.
I'm John Boyer.
I'm Ivan Erlich. Here's the table.
Scott Kepke, Soil Mix.
All right. So, you're here. We've seen a proposal, but want to learn a lot more about it. And in part, if you can just kind of recap what the program is about. And then also, I think we'll probably get into some discussion in regards to funding and sustainability and long-term outlook and more about funding. So.
Okay, just to kind of recap the premise of the project. Grow Johnson County is our plan to utilize, to start 2 acres out at the county pork farm to grow food, which would be put back in the Hunger Relief Network here in Johnson County, distributed by Table to Table, and it would make its way to different food pantries and home shelters in Johnson County to provide those agencies with healthy, nutritious, locally grown food. And the other component of this project would be education. So I can certainly let Scott talk a lot more about that, but we're hoping to make this a project that engages the entire community, not just people who are familiar with gardening and growing their own food, but people who maybe have wanted to do that and don't have the opportunity to do so. We think it's this project has potential to encourage a lot of people to begin growing their own food and learning a lot about that process.
And in the process, changing their own lives and having a little bit of control over their own destinies. Even with a small amount of space, you can grow a fair amount of food. And if we can help give them the skill set to be able to learn how to do that, you know, we're that far ahead of helping them get out of the social service system and on their feet.
Oh, and 2 acres is an incredible amount of space for yield projection. When you just look at vegetables alone, just look at typical above ground and below ground crops, tomatoes to potatoes, you can take 2 acres and just grow thousands and thousands and thousands of pounds of food. But it's not just about giving it away. It's that whole cliche of teaching a man to fish or teaching a person to garden so that they're not going to just, you know, it's not just a handout here. This is about hopefully, like what I do with my work, hopefully the kids that I'm teaching in the schools are going to be, some of them will be the next generation of growers for, again, vegetables is my focus. So that's an annual focus. And then you could get into the whole, if you look down the road, you could dream big about a perennial component to that utilized space as well for edible landscaping beyond just vegetables. But I just wanted to reiterate starting off with 2 acres. I mean, that's a huge amount of space for me. My gardens are typically in schools, you know, 500 square feet. So that's why I'm surrounding myself with a lot of people way smarter than me who actually do this for a living, who have been coaching me on what to do with that land. And the first part is to take care of the soil, because I haven't done a soil test out there. Just anecdotally, I'd like, especially if you're growing vegetables, to getting away from, you know, a conventional row crop, you're going to want to add a lot of organic matter into that first cycle. And so when I think about the first year, when I close my eyes and think about that space, I would want to spend some really quality time in the spring incorporating a cover crop onto it to build organic matter. And we could talk more about the plan that kind of we're thinking about, but that's the first step for me. And teaching, you know, like I do lots of classes on gardening that would just be an ongoing component out there for folks to be able to come and just learn the basics of food production.
And one thing I didn't mention, the recently convened Johnson County Hunger Task Force, which I know Janelle sat in on, but, you know, made up of a number of different social service leaders and also local elected officials. But essentially, one of the biggest needs that has been identified by members of the task force is that people who are food insecure in our community have really low access to fresh fruits and vegetables. So this project would be addressing a need that's unanimously agreed upon by the members of the task force.
You had me the minute I heard you had submitted this proposal. You know, we'd started with this conversation about Goodwill doing something similar, and with the whole national change in sheltered workshops, I mean, this really became something Goodwill couldn't take on, and so I think it's safe to say the board was disappointed that we couldn't move on, but, you know, there's some long-term unclarity of where we're going with the poor farm, so to talk about an edible forest or something like that, I'm not opposed to. I'm just opposed to it probably up by the buildings. And John Yeoman is our farm manager, and John has some ideas about other places, not for the vegetables, but for more of...
Like fruit trees.
Trees. And I'll just give you an example. I used it earlier this... I think I used it. It doesn't matter. I worked Project Holiday last week, and, you know, this is getting all these families their food for their holiday meal, and the box of apples was gone, and, you know, people, where I need apples, I want apples, and I didn't have any more apples. The apples they had there were for the Coralville and the North Liberty distribution sites. And so they were able to get together some money and buy another $1,000 of apples, but they weren't there that for all those families that were came while I was there. And, you know, I think people don't understand sometimes that just because you're living in poverty and you're food insecure doesn't mean you still don't want fresh fruits and vegetables. And I think we're... You know, the food task force, if there's anything that that's showing, is that group of people get it. That, you know, people want choices in their food. Canned items are great because of their shelf life and their, you know, ability to be utilized at different times and everything. So pantries wouldn't exist without canned food items. But what goes are fresh products, just to grab them as quickly as they can. So I see this as a win-win-win. What I do see as a little bit of a problem is how we get the community engaged in this to help pay for it. Because I don't think the county has so many competing demands that we can't be the sole source of funding for this initiative. But I think there are parts of the poor farm that if you're looking at a longer term, not just vegetables, but, you know, you're looking at trees or nuts or whatever, that we may have better areas than right up next to the building, because hopefully, and that's with Larry here from conservation, a broader picture of how the poor farm will be everybody's farm, and a variety of users will be there, and up close to the buildings may need to be shared space for other things, so...
I mean, I think with the, obviously we appreciated your response to the RFP. I think everybody's excited about everything you've proposed. I think what we need to get into today is a little bit of detail. Where are the places where we have questions that maybe you have a thought, we have a thought, places where maybe we disagree, and you know, I think there's obviously, you know, huge agreement on the general goals, but I think we need to talk a little specifics and how this is going to work.
Well, one thing in particular, too, is we made the assumption, or at least I was operating under the assumption, that it would be the 2 acres that would be closest to the buildings, but not. But in our conversations in the meantime, that's not necessarily the case, I assume. Or
you do the map, Andy.
Because there's a flexibility there, or there's a a possibility for flexibility for placement so that it would work best with the with what your future plans are, whether in terms of edible forest or water sources or whatever. Is am I correct in the in that thought then? Or?
Well, I think we've identified an actual piece of property,
okay.
At least for this first initial phase, and it is near the buildings, and Andy will point that out.
On the,
you can kind
on
of
the north side of the red line.
Okay.
So
can't really see his cursor, but you see where the red line kind of goes flat there. The north side of that would be the tillable ground.
Between that and the building.
Right.
You can kind of see where the farmer has.
Where we walk, John.
Exactly. And about maybe 100 feet in and go in the full width.
Okay.
And why that probably is best for vegetables is we want to put a trailhead. There's a building that's no longer there from when this picture that...
I'm going to stand over here.
Yeah, are you tall enough to reach it?
So we're talking about the space here. This building is no longer there. Trailhead potentially in this area.
Meaning restrooms. I mean that...
Okay.
Well,
that's good to know. I just didn't know. At one point it sounded that there was some discussion or possible discussion that it wasn't, it could be someplace different.
Well,
it's good to know where you're
and
thinking.
I do think other parts of it could be someplace different.
Could you scroll down, Andy?
Because John Yeomans, he could probably say a lot.
He pointed out some north slopes, and correct me if I'm wrong, but north slopes typically lend themselves to growing trees. Or is it south slopes? Fruit trees? So fruit trees, and there are actually a number of north slopes right here. This is a north-facing slope all along there. And that's right off where the trail would come back, and here's the cemetery. So it's actually really close by. Also pointed out that this fence row, kind of overgrown in trees here, you could take out some of these scrub trees because none of them are really hardwoods. And potentially put something here, but I know if you, I'm not sure what the farmer does for spraying, but I know sometimes that's a big concern. So locating it, you know, and this is a north slope. They're actually over in this area, it's more north slopes, which are further away from the farmer's farming, I guess, where he sprays. So, but the county does, if you scroll down further, Andy, the county does own quite a bit of this right in here, so, and most of these are actually scrub trees. If you go back on a map, not much there for trees, and there still isn't much there for hardwoods. It's just very soft woods.
John, will you show them the hard surface trail that we hope to build?
This green line right here will potentially be a hard surface trail all the way over to Hunter's Run. This orange line going up, the board is discussing whether to make that a hard surface able to handle heavy equipment or just put a couple of spots where the farmer can cross. And that would be the hard surface. And then there would, my proposal is there's a hiking trail that comes kind of through here and back up and connects it right back through there. So potentially easy access to where the trees would be.
Hey, John, did you point on that old pasture?
John, come on up to the mic.
We probably can make you space, John. Here you can sit with the auditor.
Hey, John Yeomans, farm manager with Farmers National Company.
Yeah, this whole area down here used to be a pasture.
Mm-hmm.
So you got some areas in here.
This right area there. Right here he's pointing to.
Mm-hmm. That's to the south
mm-hmm.
portion.
It's kind of wet and mucky in through here. Mm-hmm.
But so, I mean, that's a down-the-road thing. But what, specifically, I think we need to talk about what you guys feel like you need in terms of money, in terms of tools, in terms of bodies, and then who's providing that, the money, the tools, the bodies, the
equipment, you know,
the equipment, mm-hmm. water. We need to talk about all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I guess while we are still in discussions about the long-range vision of the poor farm, a couple of things are on the table. We're not interested in developing most of this. If you scroll down, Andy, or to the left, I guess,
There's different opinions there. Not everyone wants
there's
to
parts of that. It that we may be up to. Some people are not up to at all. Keeping the farmer that we have or someone like that as long as we can is important to us because it's revenues, and we're reinvesting those revenues into the buildings. And where we go with the buildings, if they're repaired just for historic or they're prepared for major events, is a debate. There still could be some public uses on the poor farm. That kind of depends on your perspective. Some people are for it and some against. The corner up there, I guess that'd be the northwest corner. Some people believe that will have commercial development potential someday. Some people don't want it there at all. But preserving the buildings, linking the trails, having a place where people can park, self-guided historic tours, those are all going to happen. And that's the other thing you should be aware of. We already have a lot of guests to the poor farm. And so the neighbors come in all the time. The residents of Chatham Oaks come in all the time. If there are things that you don't want them in, we're really going to have to look at fencing of some sort. Because the residents of Chatham Oaks often get inside our buildings. And nothing is disturbed per se, but it's a normal occurrence.
Yeah, if you want to get in the deep weeds of some of the costs, fencing is definitely something I wanted to talk about. Plus,
I think we need to get into deep woods, weeds, either way, because, well, there's two things. You know, obviously, we have made a decision to engage you folks in this, and so, I mean, we're committed to doing it. But there's also your request and how that fits into the many other requests we got. You know, we may be able to fund everything we were asked for, but we probably can't. And so if we probably can't, then we've got to talk about what can we do now, what can we do in future years, what are other funding sources, that kind of thing.
I just wanted to say something about the whole historical significance of this poor farm. I mean, I just thinking out loud here, you know, once you guys got it established as a national landmark, I mean, as we all know, it's an incredible, powerful space to go out to and just try to imagine what it was like 100-plus years ago on that land. And so I'm just thinking about a project I'm doing with the Czech National Museum in Cedar Rapids. They want me to come up this spring, and we're going to do a heritage garden, where I've had to do some research on what's more in a Czech garden than in my typical garden. And I'm growing a lot of cabbage, and we're going to do hops and mushrooms and stuff that I typically don't do. But I was just thinking that it would be also fun to do some research. In fact, some of it might have already been done historically about what was grown out there for annual vegetables. Because, I mean, at that time, it was a lot of vegetable production for a while. And it would just be really fun for me personally to do some more research.
That's a cool idea.
That.
It is a very good idea. It was five garden sites there.
What's that?
It was five garden sites there.
Yeah, that's what do we have any pictures or documents of what they actually grew?
We have an individual who worked there 30.
Wow.
How many years did he live there?
He lived there, or was it 20? Was it 28,
I think.
There's a long documentation, actually. There's some oral history stuff, but it's all at the combination of the State Historical Society and the Johnson County Historical Society.
Winter break research assignment.
But also, you have to remember that this is county-owned ground, so actually it's a matter of public record, so you could actually go through the board minutes, which I have, is in the 1800s.
Nice.
And they were telling about the nails, the lumber, and all the other things, the seeds that they were putting out at the poor farm. So
what a great tourist attraction to actually duplicate something that on a small scale.
And Mickey Miller, our grants specialist, is behind you. She has secured a silos and smokestacks grant for historic boards that will be worked on this winter, the language to be installed next year. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, those things are definitely going to happen. It seems like the trail, the historic, the restoration of the buildings. And then a lot of debate about other things. So you would be neighbors to a lot of that going on?
Well, that issue here is your proposal. It's not going to get $60,000. So if that's what you need, what is the plan? Was the plan all along to just have Johnson County pay for it? I mean, what was the initial thoughts behind that?
Yeah, that would be great.
Because it would have been, I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, a lot of organizations would have been, wait a second, they're paying for it?
Yeah.
I mean, it was one thing of coming up with an idea and coming in, here's some property, the people's property, to at least start the process. And then there's another one that says, oh, by the way, we don't have any funding either.
Right.
And that really is why this piece is still there and not, wasn't given to Goodwill even a couple of 3 years ago when they came up with the proposal. Now, eventually, they changed their mission a little bit via the some of the rule changes from the federal government. But, you know, at the time, I mean, we're still exploring even the idea of water, a water source, and kind of said anyone who wants this going to even have to come up with paying for that. I mean, it was just kind of, here's 2 acres, what can you do something great with? But it wasn't attached, oh, by the way, not only do we need land, we need all the resources, all the money, we need employees, we need, and then all of a sudden we got a whole new ball game. That's why we brought in the conservation department to be a part of the conversation a little bit, to see if there was some synergy between, you know, ultimately who's going to have oversight of this. You probably don't want five politicians necessarily being the ones trying to do the paperwork. It's probably not a good idea. Or at least I'm the one politician.
I don't know why you would call me a name like that.
Yeah. Just me as a politician.
Have you guys made, to Terrence's point, have you guys approached any other entity? Because you're talking about these local food pantries. Have you guys approached like North Liberty, Coralville, or any of these other entities to say, we're looking to do this at the county and provide to your local pantries? Are you willing to provide any support or initial funding? Have you guys approached them yet, or is this all just kind of...
Well, we're in such an early stage of it right now. It's hard to ask for support for something that we weren't absolutely forming yet. Mm-hmm. So that's a process that's going to have to go along. Well, and any funds that are provided, mm-hmm. we might be able to leverage with other grantors once we get an idea of scope and steps that we're taking as we go.
I'd really like to move us into the weeds, yeah. You know, and start talking about what's required here and who's going to do it.
And I will take a little bit of responsibility for what you submitted as a flux funding application, because I said to Bob, tell us what you need. Don't be afraid to ask. The only thing that can happen is you'll be told no. And if the county is able to invest some in this, then that gives you a path for going to Iowa City and Coralville and North Liberty and saying, your pantries are going to get food out of this. I need cash. The problem is our timing needs to get going a lot quicker because which I think the board of supervisors can get there pretty quick because the cities are working on their budgets. And so, you know, by the middle of next month, everybody's going to be pretty lockstep about their budget for the next fiscal year. And even squeezing out a few thousand dollars will be hard. And so, I mean, I will take a little bit of responsibility. I told you to ask for everything you needed. I didn't say we would fund it.
Well,
You have to ask. And then that also puts the public on record of what your needs are. Because I do believe the potential to fundraise here is big.
And that's an excellent point. So to Rod's and Janelle's point, since funding's limited, what are your priorities on this list that you've presented to us to say this absolutely needs to be done away?
So let's talk some specifics.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, I would say, first of all, if there's any advice I give my groups, it's to start small and get smaller. To make a point that the first year out of the gate on any project like this is just to see what you can manage, see how that goes, and then revisit in the next ripple in the pond with plan year two. We all have plenty of public-private partnership lists on my, I mean, I've got 60 organizations on my desk that I'm in touch with every year. But as Bob said, the process has been so kind of rushed a little bit in some ways for us. We haven't really been able to throw the rod out in the pond yet with those groups to get...
Careful how you say that.
and to figure out what kind of...
We're growing fish here. That's right. Let's talk about that.
But I do think that this vision that John articulated is beautiful. And it resonates deeply with... I'm biased because this is my work, but I mean, when we share this vision with folks, I think the community really understands how important and beautiful this could be. So if you start off small in year one, for instance, first of all, it'd be nice to know if we're not getting 60K, can you give me a ballpark about what you're coming down to? That would be very helpful.
Well, I mean, that's where I want to talk about what... I really, can we get the numbers up? And I just kind of want to go through and, you know, number by number. You $5,000 for this and so, $6,000 for, I mean, I just like to go through it.
We can only partially answer your question, Scott.
Okay.
We had $60,000 of flex funding.
Okay.
We gave away 40,000 of it.
All right, so that's...
This morning.
So I can do the math.
So 20,000 of it is here to talk to you. That doesn't mean you're getting 20,000. It means we need to figure this out. Now, that's flex funding through July 1. Now, we are beginning to talk about our annual budget starting on July 1. We have not come to any conclusions about how much money we'll have in block grants, whether we're entertaining new block grants or increasing someone's block grants to cover something. But we did talk about if the county bought you in this initiative equipment, that it may be preferable to us equipment for the county to actually own it and then have it on loan to you for the length of our agreement. Because let's say in a year from now you can't make this work. Then all of a sudden conservation got a lot of equipment. I mean, that's one of the things we've kind of talked about is if we buy a lot of your equipment... with our flux funding, we sign some sort of agreement that we have put it on loan to you through the life of our agreement at the poor farm. And at the end of that, if you can't make this work or you can't get the matching funds or you can't get people to buy into this, then all we did was inherit the equipment and we give it to conservation and they go, what they're going to do with it, I don't have any idea. But we think that would help the public kind of buy into this a little bit. That's all the discussions we've had. It's all been open record. You can listen to it all. But we had a lot of requests. We had nearly $300,000 or $200,000 of block grant requests. We only had $60,000 to deal with.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that's taken off
the flex funding.
I'll take one thing off the table then right away if we're going down to 20. We can't hire a farm manager in year one. That's just not going to happen. So if you're going to plan for 2016, I would love to be able to revisit that to be able to maybe, again, this gives us several months to line up partners, but, you know, I don't do anything halfway.
But I'm not sure that's true, Scott. This is why I want to get the list up of everything you ask for so we can go through and you can help us prioritize. But
okay,
you could potentially get $20,000 basically now, which goes through July 1.
That has to be spent by July 1st, correct?
Well, not necessarily.
But and then there's a possibility of other funding in the budget that starts July 1.
Okay.
So nothing's a no. But again, I think we need to go through the list and talk about each specific thing.
And he's going to get that pulled up.
And prioritize in terms of what do you really think you need now to get going versus what's a more of a wish versus what's something that could be put off a year, that kind of thing.
Well, in terms of that equipment, Janelle, I've got Jeff at Quality Care, my buddy Jeff at Quality Care, and Jason Grimm. They're agreeing to help us basically donate that labor in year one to get stuff tilled up, et cetera. I don't want to count on that forever sustainably, but we didn't have to put that. If I recall, I didn't look at the spreadsheet again since John, what was submitted to you guys. But the two biggies that I would say right off the bat before you pull that up are fencing and drip lines. We need drip lines out there, not foliar spray. This has to be drip irrigation. Mm-hmm. And for 2 acres, that chews up a lot of cash, mm-hmm. just getting those two pieces of equipment.
That's exactly the kind of thing I wanted to talk about.
And then the water tank, we don't have water there yet. The city, when we met with them, is, I would say, very unlikely to allow us to reopen the well.
Really?
Although you guys could fight that political battle, they've never allowed it to happen.
So
they didn't express interest in it at all. We will have to run water and sewer there in order to have a restroom. And we're talking a couple years. Larry can jump in here. I mean, we're not building a restroom probably next year, next summer. So you'd have to deal with, you know, some other system that isn't just a tree for the first summer for sure. So, but when if we move the water over there, it's going to be city water, which, one, you know, you can get it where you're not paying sewer on it, but you would be paying water, and it's city treated in water, which has a lot less chlorine than it used to have, but it's still city water.
How deep is the well structure out there? Does anybody know?
I'm trying to remember the exact number that Gingrich gave us. I think the pump's hanging over 100 feet down, but the thing is the pump would have to be replaced, and we also have to work with the city on getting that opened, which the city has said that they have not allowed a well inside city limits. And they kind of left it as that kind of insinuation.
You can ask. I mean,
it's better that you guys actually would ask the city versus, I think, us. They were more receptive earlier in the conversation until they looked at past history, and then they...
The well itself is actually...
I think it's
but
all...
there's no electricity to it. It used to go in the old buildings, so that would have to be refed. Your lines used to go through the old Chatham Oaks building, so that water line, we don't know where that connects and how that would run, so that would all have to be addressed. So it's not just a matter of putting a new pump in and turning it on. There's a lot of work that goes with that. So it has to be weighed what it would cost to actually do the well water versus what if city water will serve the same purpose.
One thing, when you're talking about fencing...
I'm done.
Oh.
You can sit here with Kimberly. She doesn't bite, and you're closer to the chocolate.
If you're talking fencing, are you talking deer fencing?
Yeah, that's probably just electric. But...
And there's a lot of deer out there.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I defer to you totally on advice. In that regard,
I don't know. I'm not a deer fencing expert, but I do have a farm down by Shiloh. It has a pretty high fence, and it's high, and the deer still jump over that.
Yeah.
So,
well, if you're going vegetables, 2 acres of fencing is very important. And I think Jason Grimm was recommending electric fence.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, isn't there some, Janelle, isn't there some DNR? Hadn't they embargoed some land down in southern Iowa with huge fencing due to some kind of a deer disease?
Yeah, but that was a shooting range.
Yeah, but how high was that fence? Because they don't want any deer to go back and forth.
Well, let me explain something there. Electric fence aren't allowed in the city limits. Mm-hmm. That's in the city. And we also have people at Chatham Oaks wandering around there. So I don't know. It has to be something.
Wow, okay.
Let's
see what I think of it.
Electric fencing is not going to happen.
Now, what I was thinking
about that. I wasn't even thinking about that.
What I was thinking was, I mean, you guys have been out to Wilson's Orchard.
Yeah.
The fence is, I think, 9 feet.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I would see the city potentially allowing. But I really...
That sounds really tall for a city bench.
Well, exactly. It's to ensure that no deer... jump it or attempt to, because then they get stuck in it and then they die. And
I mean, it's a farm.
Yes.
And you can...
There's certainly ways.
You can...
Zoned. What's the zoning designation?
Ag.
That part is might be, well, no, where you're going to put the fence would be either P or A.
Do you public. Know?
John, is that part land. Public?
Mm-hmm. So, I can't remember now.
For a lot of reasons, electric fence, I don't see where the county would allow that. I mean, we are not going to let our residents get shocked.
We'll put something up 9 feet high. We can do that.
I wasn't even thinking about that, you guys. I'm sorry. It didn't even cross my mind. So
out of all the things on here, what's the stuff that you think is most important in terms of this year and getting going?
Well, the drip irrigation system, for sure, for me. I'll just speak for myself and let you guys jump in. Soil amendments. That would be the compost, manure, cover crop stuff. And again, these are just ballparks. You know, these are not set in stone, but...
Right.
And for instance, John, I'm not sure, did you include labor in the installation of any fencing? When we bring
actually somebody? Don't recall if I
because,
did.
Yeah, I don't think we did. That might get donated too, who knows? Right. But I don't want to count on that. Mm-hmm. In this modest goal of year one of just getting the site prepped. And in fact, hopefully having the opportunity next fall, 2015, to put in a fall crop of something to get people excited about the vegetables that would come in 2016. Be able to do a late season planting of something to say, hey, you know, this wasn't one whole year of just putting up fence. We actually got something at the end of 2015 for you.
Scott, when we actually talked to Goodwill, they had proposed raised beds for year one and maybe even year two, right, John? Because we had in all these local foods folks to talk to us about what it would take to build that ground. And so they actually talked about, you know, something else until the actual farm ground was ready and a little bit in the... you know, where the grass is and some sort of mobile, something that could go away when the real ground was prepared. So, I mean, we were not unflexible to that idea because the real ground is going to take a while to get where you want it.
Yeah, like I say, I just know that there's a big difference between growing corn and soy and growing vegetables in terms of the nutrient needs of the soil. So that's why I keep coming back to build that organic matter year one.
So, sorry, I didn't mean to. So what, I'm just compiling my list here. I'll make sure I didn't miss anything. So year one for you, certified soil test would be one of those things.
And a water test.
And, okay. The second would be like mulch and compost.
Well, if I go in order of, yeah, I suppose if you want to take care of the soil first, the soil amendments would be first. The testing going along with that,
okay.
You know, but fencing for sure.
And fencing, and then drip irrigation.
And drip irrigation would be my top ones.
Okay.
You know, some of the stuff like the supplies, like tomato cages. That's you know.
I mean, drip irrigation though. There's no way you're going to do that without the tank.
Well, yeah. What would be budget for that? $7,000 for a $10,000 tank.
10,000 gallon.
So we're going to have to include that as well, unless you've got some other idea.
Right, and if you take just number three, that's 15,000 right there.
And to your point, Janelle, too, this is equipment as well that, if it's purchased, and in year two, you know, just playing worst case scenario here, if the partners aren't lining up, it's your equipment.
Well, that, right? We kind of talked about that because. There's a lot of long-term commitment here, and if it doesn't pan out, you know, it'd be just as easy for this to be, we buy it. You tell us, you're picking it, you're doing it, but it belongs to us, and there's some sort of agreement that was signed that at the end, if this, you know, if it dissolves within the first 3 years of the equipment's the county's, and after that, it's not. I mean, there's a way to write that. I don't know why Larry would want a water tank or drip irrigation system, but
Can I chime in? Larry Gullett with the Conservation Board. Let me say, first of all, that the whole concept of local foods, the history, the trail system, and everything is really attractive. I think that the Conservation Board would be really interested in this project. And if you're going to do a local foods program, which I think would be fantastic, especially for the urban population we have here, that you should do it right. And it would be wise to listen to the experts on what is needed and go down that path. But with that being said, it would be really nice with all the different people involved and interested in the project that if you could do this with the understanding that the site location could change, because to develop a shared vision with the affordable housing, the historic preservation people, the restroom, the trailhead, this is a really complex, big project. And then you have the city of Iowa City with their sewer system running through the property, and there's easements and maintenance required for that. And so, you know, I think that...
And a big trail coming.
What?
And a big trail.
And a big trail coming through that... To develop this shared vision and layout for the whole farm to make it really nice and make it work financially, for it would be in the best interest of everybody involved to do a shared vision plan for the entire project. And, you know, the design process can be critical, and some people may not like what comes out of it. But the idea is that everybody's at the table at the same time developing it. And so, you know, I would hate to see you invest $20,000 in the equipment and then 2 or 3 years from now decide that that location isn't quite right and have all that investment wasted. So is it possible to do these things for a year or two? And then if you want to change the location or go to raised beds, like Janelle said, in part of it, to make those changes without impairing your program?
Well, when you build soil in one spot, if you're there for several cycles of growing, you want to stay there, if possible, preferably. You don't want to have to move. But again, 2 acres is a lot of space. And so if I read you right, are you suggesting that perhaps a timeout be called on this whole thing?
No, I think you should move forward, because that can help build partnerships too. But
okay.
I think when you talk about that entry area, it's right off Highway 218. It's easily accessible to a lot of people. The high schools could use it. That whole area where you're talking about, right when you pull in with those historic buildings, the restroom facility, the trailhead, that whole area is really important.
Janelle, is that what you're talking about
No.
Moving that location of raised beds to that grassy area?
No, I just meant it so you could start getting produce right away while we're building the soil structure where we want it. And I don't mind making a decision. I've been here for 21 years talking about stupid poor farm and waiting for the county to show leadership.
We've shown the leadership. I don't know why you would suggest we haven't. I mean,
there's lots of historic markers and deteriorating buildings, and so I'm prepared.
The supervisors has been addressing those things.
I'm prepared to make a decision and say this is the local foods plot, and that's it. It's off limits for anything else. Just like the board made a decision to put Jack there, and made a decision that that's Jack's, and it's off limits to anything else.
It was a poor decision, but yes.
And that's only.
I would have voted no on the decision.
4-1 vote.
It's only 2 acres, and there's.
But if this isn't the right 2 acres, I'm fine to talk about a different 2 acres. I'm fine to talk about 2 acres here and 2 acres over here that might be trees, and split that, because you know that's one of the concerns is, if we're going to do other things in this area, are long-term trees the best idea there? And maybe they are, and maybe they aren't. But I don't want a timeout at all. I want to go gangbusters. But what I do want is a commitment from both the county and the organizations involved that we have a shared vision, but the county can't fund all this. because frankly, the county needs to invest money in the buildings. And that's our primary concern. And then secondary, we want to tie the trail system in. And so this shared vision on local foods there, it just can't be 100% paid for by the county. It just...
Nor should it be. Nor should
I mean, the partners have to step up. But I am fine with deciding which 2 acres or 2 acres here and 1 acre there or whatever and being done with that for a long, long time. And not asking you to move in a couple of years because we changed our mind. I'm happy to make a decision. So I don't share this time out. The only reason I suggested hoop buildings or raised beds or something like that is so that you could grow produce this summer. Yes, and show people that we're ready, even though the soil is improving.
And this, you folks have any problems with city water? My thoughts are, I know most people like rainwater and all that, better. If we're going to put $7,000 or whatever it is into a tank, to me, it makes more sense to run the water line, and you've got it there for the restrooms, you've got it there for the gardening, you've got steady water for your needs. You know, you hear both ways that the city water is fine for the gardens. Others say no, they prefer the rainwater, which I prefer rainwater if you can get it, but I'm not so sure we need the tank if we have that supply of city water.
Well,
Do you have a preference?
I totally prefer rainwater. Yeah, I mean biochemically, it's much preferable. But and if you know, we could catch that rainwater and trickle it out. I I'm not the expert on ratios of what we would need to get through that first year. But so getting back to the city water, though, do we have to approach? You're suggesting we approach city to talk about the logistics of getting that.
If you wanted a well, but if we're
going to have to have water supply for the restrooms we put them in, we're going to have a sewer septic system or something. So to me, I'd rather spend $7,000 to put a water line in from the city water rather than a tank, then we got something for long term. Unless you don't think that's going to work, then
no,
do something
works.
Different.
And I would prefer that you're using as much as we can generate the water off the roofs of all of our buildings, and I think that completes the cycle of our stormwater management and sustainability goals. So I think, but I don't think that, you know, that probably will be enough water in certain years, and so your supplemental water either can come, I mean, we have to run water over there to put a restroom, so that's going to happen. It can either come from that, or you can ask the city to open the well, and we'll just tell you we've already talked to them, and
yeah, I mean,
they didn't say zero interest in it, but it was close.
But unless you run an underground tank and run the water from all the separate buildings that are so far apart, you're not going to catch that one location.
We can certainly, you know, I mean, we need to run water over there anyway, and we can meter it, and I think that's the easiest way to go. But
it's more reliable than counting on the rain, because I don't want to go through the 2012 drought again where I had to water the gardens twice a day for 4 weeks. So, yeah, it's nice to have a tank as a backup, but I have no problem with going.
But then if we go that route, obviously now we've got, a metered water system that we're going to have to, lock up somehow so that only, you can't come out in the middle of the night and open her up, and then we're also going to have to decide who pays that bill.
Well, you also have to decide, getting back to Larry's point, where are you going to put the bathroom facility and your sink and all that? I don't disagree that if where we build this, it's just going to be part of the county farm piece of property, and that's just where it's going to be, and we've identified at least a space. Now, might it be next to a big parking lot? Yeah, it might be next to a big parking lot, or next to the bathroom, but again, if you want a water source, someone's got to pay for that. So if that's where the money's going to go, if you had $20,000, is that where it goes?
And to Larry's point, I think Larry also was saying that, not to take a time out, but let's say you guys and all the communities and committees involved meet and just say, you know what, the ideal spot is here, this is absolute perfect, and you guys come back to the board and make the presentation saying we'd like to relocate, everything on here can be relocated and reutilized. It would just be the permanent structure like the bathroom facility or something like that, or running a water line or a hydrant out there. That would be something that would have to be moved. But everything else could be. So, I mean, to Larry's point, that let's say when all the communities involved get together and have this vision and this goal, and all of a sudden, let's say something needs to be moved, everything on here can be moved. You just have to reprep some of the soil and stuff like that. Yep. But that's one thing nice about in the business you guys are in. It's nothing that's really super hard and fast and cannot be removed ever.
Can we have the graphic again?
Janelle, that's coming up. One thing I've repeatedly heard over the years from different operators that's been on the farm, it's a wet farm. Mm-hmm. It needs drainage tile, and that might have been the reason for the raised bed idea. Drainage is going to be your bigger problem long term than actually irrigation water.
So I didn't draw this, and I don't actually like where the 2 acres are. And that's clear across the buildings, because the backdrop then of the buildings, if we're having an event there, is going to be an ugly 9-foot fence. It just happens to be where the water is. Where we need to bring water, where we can generate water off the buildings, and where the well is located. But John figured out it's cheaper to drill a new well than the old well. It's the same price.
It's essentially the same price.
It's not allowed. They're not going to allow it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't put it past the local foods people to influence the city council, but...
You're not going to have a fence. You're not talking a fence that's going to be... It's going to be like chicken wire, and then you'll have people will be able to see whatever's growing.
It's completely see-through. If you guys have been out to Wilson's, you can see through the fence.
It won't be unsightly.
No.
So, okay.
And part of it's trellis to have grow cucumbers and peas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this is John Yeomans. The least amount of deer damage is going to be up by the buildings.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the center of the farm where I've gone in there, you almost always see deer or something in there.
Right behind the jack?
Yeah, back and through there.
Okay.
You know, raised beds or not, there are all kinds of designs that every gardener is going to have a different design package that they would like to consider for vegetables, flowers, and herbs. In terms of one expense, and I would like to go back to Rod's statement on the farm manager. We're all volunteers here. We all have our own full-time jobs and juggle a lot of balls. That's what we all do here. So none of us would be able to manage that spot the way that it needs to long term. And that's one of that's the next biggest cost I need to address in my partnership meetings this winter, is to come up with down the line a commitment from you and us that this is going to require us hiring somebody to actually manage the production of vegetables, be it at a food corps volunteer, which are pretty... It's a lot cheaper. It's a matching situation. I don't know if you know how that works, but we have several. We all know a lot of people who would love to throw their hat in the ring for that. In fact, I've been working with Tina and Sarah at the North Liberty, food pantry. That they just got that matching grant from Wellmark, and they're going to hire. They've been doing interviews this whole week, and they're going to hire someone tomorrow. So lots of good people will want to apply for that, but I just wanted to get that on the table with you again, Rod. That I told these guys, they know me well. I don't do anything halfway, and if I go into this, I need to look beyond year one to year three at least to have a plan in place. That's why I'm being very modest in my first year goals. But in year two, I would love to be able to count on you guys to continue to come up with some cash here, and I don't know where that line is, but...
Mm-hmm. Mike? Yeah, Supervisor-elect Mike Carberry, just getting back to the location, I think that one of your priorities was education.
and using this two-acre plot as education. And I think that the prominence front and center of these 2 acres, close to a future parking lot, close to the restrooms, close to the water, makes it the ideal location for education. If we were going to put this 2 acres on the south side or the west side or the east side in an inaccessible location on the farm, it might be a little bit better land for growing vegetables, but it definitely would not be a better plot for the education.
You're putting words in my mouth, Mike. That's not what I suggested.
Oh, I didn't.
I don't like it long and parallel. I would rather it's a square.
Well, no, I don't care what shape it is.
And right where it is, the very reasons, right along the trail.
Sure.
And a square as opposed to long and parallel. Yeah. I mean, that's what I...
And my comment wasn't about anybody else's.
I didn't draw that. John drew it.
Yeah. This is John Yeomans. Yeah, I drew that map, but the lease agreement we have in place with the operator today is flexible. You know, he's just running 116 acres. Mm-hmm. So we can move lines around before, you know, hopefully we need to do it before planting time, but we have 3 or 4 months to move lines around.
I did not like that myself when we first started that, but the farmer felt these were the short rows. It was easier for him to give that up than have to try to turn and try to farm in short stretches rather than farming.
And John,
through.
To your point about the muck factor, I've walked out there, so you're right. It's especially when you get farther into that tree line, it gets wetter and wetter and wetter. But I think the spot that I've seen more than once that's already been identified just by anecdotal evidence, I think the drainage there is okay for the vegetable production.
Well, and the board, John has wanted us to invest in tiling, but when the entire poor farm was kind of in, we're not clear where we're going, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And there are, you know, I'm one who doesn't like tiling. I think tiling is contributing to a lot of our water quality and our flooding issues. And so I would want to be very, very careful before the county farm got tiled. That's not to say it shouldn't happen, but your traditional farm tiling I have a big problem with. So, you know, we understand that if we're going to keep farming this, at least part of it, tiling has to be on the table because in certain years it's just really, really wet.
That's a question I have for Larry. Looking at that, and you've walked a little bit of it, if you were tiling, you'd definitely want to put that in before the trail goes in.
Well, and all these things you're talking about are huge discussions. And so, for example, if you want to do tiling but in a sustainable manner, maybe you can put tiles in the upper stretches of the upland areas but have them dump out down below before it enters the main creek so you can slow and re-infiltrate that water instead of just shooting it off. So there's that's why I said the design is a very critical process, and we're going to be really complex to go through it and get it right. But if you go through it and you don't get it right, the repercussions down the line are worse than if you take your time and get it. So I agree with Janelle. Tiling, you know, it increases nitrates in the water, in the surface waters. And so you have to be really careful if we're making this to produce local foods and an example for conservation. We want to do those things, but we want to do it right environmentally.
Well, this is John Yeomans. I've been to tiling seminars, and there's some new tiling technology where you tile on the contour, and Nature Conservancy has done some pilot farms where, like, say, down
in this area, you'd put a catch basin or a pond, mm-hmm. and then you tile.
And now you're talking.
That's and your tile water runs in there, and then in the dry part of the season, you pump the water back out into the tile lines.
Right.
You pump them up to the tile lines, and they run back through on the contour. It's incredibly expensive. But the Nature Conservancy and some other groups thought that exploring that technology was enough. They were able to do an 80-acre farm in Illinois as a pilot project. But it makes sense. In the spring, your water runs off, goes in the pond. In the summer, and when you need the water, you pump it back out.
I want to keep our eye on the ball here. We're talking about 2 acres, and I really think a conversation on tiling 100 the whole thing, we'll never get anything done. You know, so let's focus on the 2 acres. We all know that the other 114 acres we have, 116 acres that we have, there's a lot of debate about what we're going to do. So let's debate that another day. Let's talk about this project and what's needed and what we can do right now.
Well, one thing we were in conversations ahead of time, too, is what is your comfort level with us taking the time to prep the soil so that possibly there wouldn't be the production that first year, but the emphasis would be creating the proper conditions so that we can have the maximum amount of return when we do start planting. And then when we do start planting, that might be the scope of that might be limited by the amount of funding, but possibly maybe in something I just said this morning and we haven't had to talk about yet, but do it in modules, and as you have the wherewithal to add modules to put more and more into production, do it in a phased manner.
But I think, Bob, you're exactly where we need to be in that we need to come to an agreement on a piece of land, the first piece, and maybe down the road you now understand where a orchard may be a better place, which we don't have to decide today. And nobody's going to be happy with a piece of land, and everybody's going to want something else, but it needs to be a long-term agreement, and we'll have to go to public hearing because you can't sign a lease, you know, longer than 3 years, was it?
I can't remember. Sign 3 years or more.
Yeah, so, but a long-term investment, because that's the only way this soil will become what you want, and then hopefully the city will partner and give you compost for free, and you know, the conservation or secondary roads can haul it. And, you know, maybe there's a great relationship to go, but I think we have to identify the part that's going to be vegetables and we have to mean it and not change our mind 4 years from, 2 years from now. I mean, 10 years from now, all bets are off. Everything could change. But, you know, we need to find the piece of land that everybody's comfortable. And no, the farmer's not going to like it because of the turn radius. And maybe he can't farm that part anymore, and it becomes prairie. I mean, I don't know the answer to this.
Well, no, go ahead. No, I was just, in particular, what I was mentioning within that 2 acres, doing a modular style of growing as the wherewithal comes through. So as
resources
long as
become available, and that's really what this is about is helping us identify. If you had $20,000 that the Board of Supervisors wanted to invest for this project, and by the way, I think we're very committed to that thought process for this, certainly for the end of this fiscal year, but if that means for the year of 2015, what could you do with it? And gets back to what Rod's been trying to get back to this whole conversation is, you kind of have the parameters of where the property is. You know that the farmer is going to want to know exactly what he can and can't farm here fairly soon. But going out there and identifying, maybe only start with an acre, but you don't farm the rest.
Let me throw something out. It kind of breaks down in a way that I think makes some sense. What if we talked about a $20,000 investment now, and you guys figure out what you have to do now, you know, where that money needs to be spent. A $20,000 investment on July 1, and again, you guys figure where that $20,000 needs to get spent. And basically, that's pretty much it, although there may be a little bit ongoing in terms of where I can see us helping with things like advertising and that kind of stuff, promotion. But where I'm a little nervous is the idea of the staff person. You know, that's an ongoing expense, and we're actually struggling as it is with the number of staff people we have and making sure we don't add those ongoing staff expenses, you know. And then the challenge to you guys is go out and raise the money to run the place. And that's what you have to do. That's your challenge. You know that everything else has been taken care of. We own the equipment. We own the land. It's all yours to use. You just have to find the people, whether it's through volunteer or paid staff or however you're going to do it. You have the people to do it.
Yeah, there'll be a lot of volunteering initially anyway. And to get to the point of, and I mean to beat a dead horse, but education is the foundation of what I do. And so what we can do in year one, for instance, with the public too, is have this great opportunity to do a lot of public awareness and education about this project as it's getting prepared for year two.
Right.
And I can get even more specific if you'd like about even specific things that we'd like to grow in year one or two.
Well, I'm just wondering, how does that general...
When I look at this whole bird's eye view of this space, there's such an incredible opportunity for biodiversity in that space. And this is where then I hand off the baton to Fred Meyer, who does all the edible landscaping for perennial landscaping, mm-hmm. and comes in and takes a PDF of this and really plays around with beautiful designs to put in more of the forest vision, et cetera. But
That's why I don't like the long skinny that direction. I like it the other direction because it's headed to the cemetery.
Yeah.
And I think that would draw people in, and it also may be headed to where would be best for your forest.
One of the first questions I asked John and another pantry professional was, what do you need, obviously? Like, what are people wanting and what are you running out of? And we got it very specific, green beans, potatoes, a couple things that you can start off out of the gate and really focus on checking off some of those off the list.
Onions. I could not believe how many onions I gave away last. I mean, I was hauling them. 60 pounds at a time, so I'm still aching. But onions, unbelievable amount of onions. Apparently, that's hard to get.
How does that vague proposal sound of 20,000 followed by 20,000 and then you guys raise the money or find the in-kind staffing to do what is required there?
I like the public-private quasi-partnership model of working with you as public officials and soliciting all of our private interests, corporate sponsorship possibilities, etc. There's a lot of money floating around out there. It's just a matter of taking the time to make the connections. And I like the first year being slow because then you can bring those sponsors out and say, this is our vision. And, we're only going to be able to count on the county up until a certain point, and we need you to take over.
Yeah. And knowing that there's an amount there that we can point to then and say, we can either leverage that as a match, or you can say that we know that we've got this much to work with. Then can we bring in extension service
and
or
we
whatever?
Can, yeah. We can talk with John about, what the fair market rental rate is for this land, and essentially that's a county contribution on an ongoing basis, and it's significant. I mean, we're getting $38,000 for the whole thing, so this is not, it's not nothing. It's a couple thousand bucks a year if you view it that way, for grant purposes. And we'll have to talk about water metering and how that gets paid, and so there's the potential for the county to have a lot of money in this that you could use as a match.
This is John Yeomans. If you want advertising, I'd put the plot or the gardens along Melrose and corner of Slothauer, and you could have a sign up on the road and everybody goes by and look at it.
Yeah, that's not going to happen because some people have visions of something else there. Mm-hmm.
I have a liability issue question for the attorney.
It's a good one.
Who's going to get sued when someone gets hurt out here?
You would be.
Hopefully they don't.
Probably.
The people that are leasing the property.
Everybody will get sued is the bottom line, but I think we would expect you to have some sort of...
Sure, you go.
John, maybe that's a good question. Like, if the farmer gets injured, we're not responsible for his injury, right?
No, we require all my farm operators have to have $1 million of liability coverage per occurrence. Most farm operators I work with have assets well above that.
If Table to Table is the lead agency here, the lease would be with Table to Table, and our lawyers would require them to carry...
So we'd add a rider to our insurance.
Yeah, I was going to say, Grow JC doesn't exist on paper.
So Table to Table would probably have to be the lead agency, and we would have an agreement with them, and they would have to give us the proof of insurance, and the lease would be with them. The same could be true with the equipment. If Rod's proposal is out there, and you say, okay, we want to buy, $20,000 of equipment, then our agreement would probably be, let's say this was a 5-year lease. I don't know. You guys need to tell us what you want, and then we'll figure it out. 5-year lease that you know, the equipment was yours to use as you saw fit for 5 years. And if for any reason the agreement ended, that would come back to the county at the end of the 5 years, you own it or whatever. I mean, you know, you would be leasing the land. The county would not. Now, Rod alluded to there could be some in-kind stuff. It is possible that Iowa City would donate the compost and the county can help move it. And your volunteers would come plow it in. It's possible.
Or pay for the water.
Or pay for the water. Iowa City may allow the water line, and they may choose that that's how they're going to pay. We'll move the water line. And it could be that our grant specialist in the back of the room, Mickey Miller, can help you with a grant. I mean, you know, apply to a corporation, and she can help you write that. I mean, I think the county is in.
CDBG.
Yeah, the county is in on helping. We like the vision, but we obviously have no one in the county government capable of leading. I'm not, they're capable, but they have other jobs of leading this. But we, from my perspective, having this be a whole buy-in from other people is important to make it work. And if we gave you the seed money and a foundation for a year and a half, that ought to enable you to parlay that into broader community support for the long run.
Yeah, I wanted to reiterate that it was never our intention to rely solely on the county for funding. So a seed money essentially would be incredible and kind of kickstart this project. And even just the short time that we've been sharing our vision with other, you know, potentially corporate sponsors and just other people, we have been talking with a lot of farmers and different agencies, but people are really excited about this project. And I think it'll be, you know, not easy, but fairly easy to get people on board, and whether it's committing their time, but also their resources.
Oh yeah, this is just, I mean, this is just, these are easy sells to explain to people an investment of their dollars. And, but I still think that in the end, bringing conservation in as the umbrella is a conversation the board really needs to have with conservation. Again, if you want the Board of Supervisors to manage this, or if there's a department in county government that is most capable of managing, I can think of another other than conservation that really falls under that. I mean, unless you want Andy Johnson to be managing that, which he could, but that's up to the Board of Supervisors.
You should have picked Mickey.
Yeah, I had Mickey do it.
Yes.
So I guess, you know, let's... We're kind of getting close on time here. I'm not even sure if we're going to be able to get to other stuff here now. But I think what you're hearing from the Board of Supervisors is that through conversations we had in the last couple of weeks through the Innovation Fund, we are interested in investing a third of that fund. By the way, the other monies went to things like the wet shelter, crisis center, free lunch program, DVIP, and a majority of it, the most of it, it's going to this. So I think you're seeing a commitment by the Board of Supervisors for something that seems really, really neat. At the same time, all of us, with Mike now on the Board of Supervisors here shortly, we are working on creating, I think, more of a vision for what we want for that piece of property, and we're not unanimous at all. And the reason that it's fairly generic and there's at least a plan in place is because you have five county managers in Johnson County, and not one. So we're going to have to kind of give and take and see where we can come up with at least three supervisors interested. We are interested, though, in that we want to commit 2 acres. If there's a way to have you folks look at that fairly soon and say, do we want a linear approach or more of a box approach? I think I've heard three supervisors. I heard two plus me, and I don't know where... Or Rod, I think you're. I don't like the long approach either.
We need to nail that
down. Yeah, you probably want to know where you're going to put it.
So how do we go and proceed?
Put that scale up.
That was my original.
Mickey's expertise is going to come into play now.
Yeah, can I make a comment on that? This is Mickey Miller, Grants and Communications Specialist. The value of that, and I think the reason that Goodwill had wanted that, is all of that southern exposure.
Yes.
And the drainage is going to be more similar in that space than as you start coming down that hill. Mm-hmm. So I understand Janelle's point of getting more visibility of bringing it down, but there's going to be a lot more issues as someone who owns a very, very wet piece of property.
So I guess...
And part of it, too, is we need a space there to keep farm drift, you know, sprays and stuff from going onto that property.
Right. We need to... Because you requested how much buffer?
Where do you see the...
How much buffer did you request?
It was 30 feet or more.
John, do you know?
I think last year it was like 20 feet.
Yeah,
20, it wasn't very much.
30 is required for organic certification, yeah. Right?
It might have been 30.
The only other spot I thought might work would be this here.
Yeah.
It runs along the trail, but it would be right here.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to just... Can we just today pick it? I mean, I just...
Well, I would like to give them one more chance.
I'm out there right now.
Well, you know... We don't meet again until January 2nd after today, so we can't decide anything. Rod's proposal of $20,000 for flex funding, which would be relatively immediate, $20,000 for July 1, and 2 acres of land, and as a possibility... You go look it all over again and think through this conversation and tell us what 2 acres it is, and we'll see if we can make that work.
When does Jim need to know that?
This is John Yeomans. Jim Slotik, he'd probably like to know as soon as possible. I would actually, he does do community garden type outreach projects. I would call. I can give his phone number.
Love to meet with him.
You ought to meet with him out there, and he can show you where all the pitfalls are out there, because he's hit them over the last few years in terms of wet areas.
And while you're there, Scott, look at the areas John Yeomans told you about for possible future orchards.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this is John Yeomans. Basically, a few years ago, we talked about clearing off these knobs. This is going to be a wet area, wet area. There might be a knob here. There's a knob here. There's a wet area here. So, you know, go out and walk around.
That finger thing up there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We talked about dozing this down at one time. We just never did it.
But he's going to be making plans, you know, for cultivating this area. So, I don't care if we do it today or if you want a couple weeks or whatever, but let's just decide it. We just need to decide. So, and I'm going to, and I'll support whatever you guys want to do.
And then
I just
come back with a detailed proposal to us of how you could spend $40,000. What would be the priorities? I think that and then let's get this back on.
Maybe. Even breaking it up into 20 and 20.
Yeah,
there's an order.
Because it wouldn't all come at once.
You need that now?
No, we don't need it now. But we'd probably, we're taking a little higher up approach and saying, go do all the work. You know, it's kind of like this. You come up with the money, you go. No, I would think we'd probably put it on the agenda maybe in the second week of January, somewhere in there.
We don't have another budget meeting until...
After the budgets.
The 5th and 6th.
But I think we can at least...
And then we meet basically every day for budget for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But by the end of... You know, by like the 20th of January, our budget's going to be done. So if we were going to find another $20,000, which isn't a promise or a guarantee, it's to say come up with a proposal, we would need to have figured it out by the middle of the month. And that's why you need to get to the cities, because, you know, it's already happening there. And that's for July 1.
So, but nonetheless, that's something we can at least use as a placeholder of where we are. And then you'll work with Andy and Pat. Pat will be the chair next year. So as far as coordinating the scheduling of when to come back.
When you're looking at that spot out there, whichever you look at, you know, just keep in mind accessibility and parking areas so that we're not all over the place. And
yeah.
You make a good point, too, because when I design gardens, I always have disabled access considerations, too, for some of those beds. And so, I just wanted to throw that out there, that it's not just, you know, everyone on their hands and knees. This is something that's going to require some paths, even, that would allow a wheelchair to go through safely.
we should say that you need to also talk to us about space. We have two lean-to-like buildings that are not part of our initial remodeling or restoring. We will begin to start moving stuff out of that. We probably can't get it. If it never snows, we may get it out, you know, but we're waiting on our new building to be opened and the other building to be moved. So sometime in the spring, stuff will start leaving those two areas. But that is not the actual barn. They're...
Right, it's the lean-tos. But
the lean-tos.
The open air
yeah.
that we saw that had
right.
some equipment in it.
So if you're talking about you want to store stuff that, you know, you... I mean, we're flexible to a cage-type system, but...
We could also use, potentially, we could work out maybe a key system with the dairy barn. It would just depend on what you wanted in there and who'd have a key and that sort of thing.
Right. But we wouldn't guarantee that space
no,
another summer.
Big conversation and...
No, just short-term.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of that. I'm not sure if you want
to... You know, and I'm glad that you mentioned, Terrence, that about the... how some of the funding went to the crisis center and some of it went to the free lunch program, because I want to reemphasize too is that this project benefits all those entities as well. And so any money that's funneled into this is going to be broadcast out into those other agencies, whoever gets that, the vegetables that we're doing, whoever's benefiting from the educational process. So it's actually going to leverage those dollars that you're giving to us and really impact the community quite
yeah,
a bit.
Yeah, all
really
the funding, all
that.
The $60,000 funding went to either some form of food issues or some emergency housing.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's, you know, while the details here are complicated and whatnot, the takeaway here is this is a really cool thing. And it brings the poor farm all the way around again to where the people's land is helping grow food for the people. And I just think it's a really cool thing. And I think local and, you know, donors should be all over this if we can make them the right proposal. It's cool. Thanks for coming forward.
Thanks for your time. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yep. We'll see you in a couple of weeks.
All right.
Need some candy for the road. The bag's right there.
Larry, thank you again for coming here.
John, thanks for coming in.
Want to be a part
thanks
of these
for connecting with these guys.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks, Larry.
Thanks, everybody. Let's take a 2-minute break and then... actually, let's just get through one more thing.
Hey, if you...
we just are getting through internal processes.
If you hang out for a few minutes, John Etheridge's... reception is on the ground floor at 3 o'clock.
Oh, okay.
And he made cheesecake, so.
He made it.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted.
Hey, fellas, would you mind, we've got just one more thing. Would you mind taking the conversations
no
out?
I got you. Glad to do it.
Thanks, guys.
All right, we're going to keep going on in our meeting, so. No, that's all right. That's all right. We'll get through one more area. Andy, where are we?
I think you're on internal processes.
Thank you.
And I really don't have much except to cover the holidays. Mickey will be out tomorrow, and I will actually be out on Friday the 2nd, so Angie will be covering the meetings that day, swearing in and everything. Mickey will be around also to do the communications surrounding that day.
We're going to miss you.
I know. I had a family thing that was, once you canceled the work session, I couldn't really, wasn't justified in saying no. So anyway.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's all I have.
Okay. Where do people want to sit next year?
Right here.
You want to just be over there?
I figured I'd share it where I was at.
That's fine. Where would you like to sit?
I'll just stay. I mean,
okay.
You want that?
I don't care. Okay. That's fine.
Basically, you pick one and Mike gets what's left.
Okay. We'll give Mike the scraps.
I think you have your choice of either of
that's
those
fine.
Seats. Is that all right?
Yeah, if Pat, you want that next year, that's fine.
Probably.
I know. I really couldn't. I really don't care less. That's fine. It's a good spot. Okay. So.
I like this corner, but Rod won't move, so I'm stuck until he becomes
nice
chair.
Internal. Any other internal processes?
Good. Were you assigning seats?
Yeah, it sounds like you're going to get this spot right here.
John's old seat. That's
yeah,
fine.
You get John's
You didn't have much choice.
Exactly.
You get his old office, too.
Yeah.
Wait, did anyone want John's office?
You should consider it. Bigger. John and I have the best. Yeah. They're bigger and the best windows.
You talking to me?
Well, I'm just saying.
Oh, I know.
Sally and I lucked out when you guys all started fighting over the corners.
No, no one wanted my spot.
You're the only one who wanted it.
Yeah.
Pat wanted a corner. Nobody else said anything.
I couldn't care less. I don't.
Pat wanted a corner, and Terrence wanted that end. And
no, I didn't. I was just the one that didn't say anything, so I got that one. I know, I really don't. It doesn't matter. No, it doesn't matter. I like being in the corner. I hide. It's where I eat. Okay, any other comments there?
I had just one quick thing for internal processes, just okay. so folks will know. I had been working on some stuff, poor farm related, and kind of intended to get it to everybody before this conversation, although it's really not related. But so I just put it in your boxes, so you'll all see it.
I saw that, yeah.
And it obviously is just somewhere in 6 months or 6 years when we talk about that stuff, you got something to chew on. Okay. So,
Rod, I can't ask questions, but is it 24 acres total you've got here laid out?
I'll talk to you about it after. How's that?
Everyone may have that question.
But yeah.
Okay.
As far as John's gathering, I know it starts at 3. What time? Were we going to have any presentation or anything?
Well, there's a gift that if you want to make a presentation around 4, I did what had been said.
Okay.
And so that wasn't in the publicity at all. I did have a question from Fred Schuster about that, so that's what I've...
Okay. So if I'm gone, you can do that? Okay, cool. Sounds good.
Should the governor come?
If the governor comes? All right, then I'll definitely be out of there about 2:15. It's 2:30 right now, everyone. Any other thoughts? Comments?
When are we doing the collective bargaining discussion?
Yeah. That's what we are. Next. Okay. So let's go ahead and ask for a motion to go into a possible executive session pursuant to Iowa Code Section 20.173, exempting negotiating sessions, strategy meetings of public employers, mediation, and the deliberative process of arbitrators from the provisions of Chapter 21. Is there...
Move approval.
Second.
It's been moved by Rettig and second by Sullivan to go into executive session for this purpose. And what we'll do is we'll have a vote, go into executive session, take a quick break, and good. And should assess change the process here. So, roll call.
Harney.
Aye.
Neuschel.
Aye.
Rettig.
Aye.
Sullivan.
Aye.
Motion is approved. Okay, let's take a quick 2-minute break. 2 minutes, let's eat some candy.
I'm gonna carry these in. Do you want some more?
Probably one.
Mike, can you need any?
No, I'm fine, Joe. Thanks.
Kimberly?
No, thank you.
Oh. Okay. Dana? Chocolate? Good.